Why, hey, it's time for Ask the Tech Guys. I'm Leo Laporte. Coming up, Rod Pyle and I talk UFOs.
Ooh, and I'm Micah Sargent, and I'm going to give you three things you need to do when you first get an iPhone.
Oh, that's good. And I'll explain why there is nothing intelligent about artificial intelligence. Ask the Tech Guys is next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Ask the Tech Guys with Micah Sargent and Leo Laporte, episode 1979, recorded Sunday, June 18th, 2023. It's a box of rocks. Ask the Tech Guys is brought to you by Fastmail. Reclaim your privacy, boost productivity, and make email yours with Fastmail. Try it now for 30 days at fastmail.com/twit. And by Drata, security professionals often undergo manual tasks of collecting evidence. With Drata, companies can complete audits, monitor controls, and expand security assurance efforts to scale. Say goodbye to manual evidence collection and hello to automation, all done at Drata speed. Visit Drata.com/twit to get a demo and 10% off implementation. And by Lectric e-bikes. Skip the played-out gifts this Father's Day and give the gift of adventure with Lectric e-bikes. Visit lectricebikes.com to learn more and explore the epic models Lectric has to offer. And by Brooklinen. This year, give your dad the gift of a good night's sleep. They deserve the best rest, and Brooklinen has their comfort covered with a lineup of home essentials made for relaxation. Visit brooklinen.com today and get $20 off plus free shipping on orders of $100 plus with the code TECHGUY.
It's time for Ask the Tech Guys, the show where we take your questions live on air and do our best to answer them. I am one of your hosts, Micah Sargent.
I'm Leo Laporte, as one is wont to say, hey.
Hey.
Somewhere on the set, if you're watching the video, I have hidden something that we're going to talk about in a moment. But first, let me tell you, coming up, we're going to talk about space with Rod Pyle.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about photography with Chris Marquardt. We're going to take a lot of your calls, and we're going to hear from the guy who started the Reddit revolt. But first, here it is. It's so thin you can barely see it. You might have thought, why, that's merely an artifact on the television screen. But no, that is the 15-inch MacBook Air. Look how it's so big.
Wow.
That when you see it on the side, it seems really extra thin.
Yeah.
And I heard people say, boy, that seems light. It's 3.3 pounds. It's not light by any means. But because it's so big, you feel like that's light.
It's pretty light. But yeah, I expected it to be lighter. It is heavier than I expected.
It's 3.3 pounds. It's not a... You have the 12... What is it? The 14-inch... 13-inch version of this. Here, put it side by side so you can
see. I'll bring
it over. So it's not that much bigger. I like a 15-inch screen. In every other way, this is identical to that.
Mm-hmm.
Same processor, same guts. It has two extra speakers. Oh, you know what? Well, we can't. It won't really work. But I was going to play some music on this, and you play some music on that.
I imagine, yeah.
This is somewhere in between that, which doesn't have the greatest music reproduction, and the MacBook Pros, which actually sounds so good.
Quite good.
I kind of want to listen to music on them. This is pretty good.
it's aight.
It's pretty good. It's aight. Good enough, I think. But you know what? They didn't do with put the speakers.
Yeah, there are no speaker grills on it, are there?
So I think that might be one of the reasons it's impeded. Also, not better battery life because the larger screen takes battery away. So as a result, you get no net gain. It's 18 hours of watching Apple TV.
Does that have a screen notch or are the bezels big enough that it doesn't? Okay.
It has a nitchy notchy. Let me open something that's not in dark mode because that's why you can't see the notch. Well, actually, you probably couldn't. No, yes, you can't because the notch is
in
the... They're very clever about it. It's up here. And I use hidden menu or hidden bar.
Got it. Okay.
So that I squeeze my menu bar down. It's over here. Squeeze it down so it doesn't impede. The notch doesn't impede. So I was all excited. Do you have my over the shoulder? I was all excited because I thought, oh, this is really a nice screen. Mm-hmm. And then Paul Stamey, we call him on Mastodon said, well, how's it compare to the MacBook Pro with the XDR display? So I went and got Lisa's very fancy M2 Max MacBook Pro with 64 gigs of RAM.
Uh-oh.
And now I don't like my display.
Oh, come on.
It is not as good as the XDR, I have to say. Now, I am running this. They want, so the native resolution is 2880 by 1964.
Okay.
And they want you to run it at not exactly half, but at 1710 by 1107. That's the default, which I found to be a little small. And it's weird because it's not, you know, normally when you do the resolution, you want to do half of the native resolution so that you don't have jaggy, but I guess Apple's so good at it or something that they don't have that problem. So they can recommend 1710 by 1107, which is a weird aspect ratio.
That is odd.
But you get 1080p, I guess. So it's for high def video. But I'm running at 1440 by 932 because everything's a little bigger, a little bit easier to see. So as a result, I only get a little bit more screen real estate than you do. But enough. I like it. It's nice.
Yeah. It sounds like you're not so sure that.
No, I do. Thank you, Stammy, for making me hate my screen. I don't hate it. It's still nice. It's very nice. It's like your screen.
I mean, this particular laptop, I really love the 13 inch is fine. The size, the weight, I've been surprised with how powerful this is, despite being a MacBook Air.
It's plenty. M2 is plenty. It maxes out at 24 gigs of RAM. At least, as I said, 64.
15 inch, can it run to two external screens?
It's the same
exact. Okay, so it's exactly the same. Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, I thought it might be more. So now I'm thinking, well, and you know what's interesting? That's a little too small. This is a little too big. Lisa's was 14 inch right in the middle. Just right.
Yeah.
So now I'm thinking I want the Pro XDR display. So I'm going to wait till the M3 comes out. And I've been cautioning Mac people. The M2 was an incremental improvement on the M1. We expect a lot more from the M3 because it's the new 3-nanometer process from TSMC. And it should be a good leap forward from the M1 and M2. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, well, next year I might be getting myself a
14-inch.
14-inch M3.
It's the Goldilocks for you.
And then this will go in Leo's garage sale. You know what I should do? Is my box of garage sale items is in the backs of my car.
You're carrying it.
It would be fun someday to bring that in before I show it to the staff.
Oh, yeah. That would be cool.
And show you what I'm getting rid of.
Yes. remember this. Yeah. That'll be fun, actually.
So the Reddit revolt is heating up. Somebody's got to zip up Steve Huffman, the CEO of Reddit's mouth.
Just keeps talking and saying all the wrong things.
He gave three or four interviews on Friday that were, I think, counterproductive would be a nice way to say it.
I would even describe them as unhinged.
He compared Reddit's mod. Okay, so you got to understand, if you don't use Reddit, Reddit is software. It's kind of like forum software that lets users create what they call subreddits, discussion areas, subreddits. And then people would volunteer to moderate it, to keep it clean, to keep it on topic. It's a lot of work to moderate it. Mm-hmm. They don't work for Reddit. They're just users. And then people like you and me read and post to it. And over how many years has Reddit been around? 8 years, something like that. It's maybe a little longer, 13. It's become a great repository of information because if you go to, actually, this is in Reddit's own advertisements, the maple syrup subreddit, you will have people who live their lives to find the best maple syrup. And you can say, what's the best maple syrup? And they will give you like good information, much better than Google.
Right.
Like great information. So it really is kind of in the spirit of the traditional web, like Wikipedia was, blogs were, where people who are obsessive about a topic will post and help and talk about it. It's a huge value Reddit has gained. Now, all they did is make the software. It's all Steve. He wrote it, by the way, in the early days. He wrote it and gotten rewritten since, but he wrote the first version along with Alexis Ohanian, the founders, and Aaron Schwartz, the founders of Reddit, the early guys. But now Steve, you know, CEOs have come and gone, and Steve, for some reason, came back as CEO, and he's changed. He's not the guy he used to be. And he seems to think that the most important part of Reddit is the software underneath, not the moderators and the people who put the content there. But as anybody who uses Twitter or any social network knows, that's what's strong.
That's what makes it worth going to.
Right. That's the value of it. And so now Steve Huffman is saying, so remember, they wanted to turn off the third party apps. Mm-hmm. And they did it only slightly better than Twitter. Twitter just cut him off. Elon just cut him off. And apparently Huffman is a fan of Elon's. He says, I like his management style.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So instead of cutting him off,
full answer.
They did a kind of a backdoor thing where they raised the cost of the API so high that third party apps couldn't afford to exist. You can't, you know, use the API to get the data from Reddit and display it. And Huffman's point of view is, well, they're just, these apps are doing the same thing we're doing, except they're charging for it and making money on it. And we're providing all the horsepower for those apps and not seeing any of that revenue, which is not unreasonable.
Right.
It's not unreasonable to say we don't want any more third-party apps. There's a problem, though, because the moderators, the unpaid volunteers, also use third-party apps. So there's some difficulty there. In any event, the decision to do this and do it in such short notice, it ends at the end of the month, the new API goes in effect, has really consternated users and third-party app developers who, several of them, have said, we can't keep going. It's too expensive. Reddit is fun. Riff on Android is one of them. But the most used app, the one I use, the one I love, is Apollo by Christian Selig. You talked to him on Thursday.
I did. I had the opportunity to talk to Christian Selig. I wanted to keep having a conversation, but we didn't have too much time. But one of the questions I asked, because it's something that I'd seen other people kind of wondering about, and I think what was kind of important for Christian to be able to explain is, you know, why not simply raise the price of Apollo and use that to fund the app and keep it going? And this is what Christian had to say.
So the first one is, it doesn't seem to me like at this point, through the actions Reddit have taken, have indicated that they want third-party apps around in any capacity anymore. So it would be one of those things where, like, if you're going into work every day knowing your boss kind of hates you and is trying to figure out a way to get rid of you, it's not an environment that is super productive to work in, I would say. And I think, like, Reddit's actions, even through how they've kind of indirectly tried to kill third-party apps, but even beyond that, like, there's been weird allegations where they said, I've, like, tried to blackmail them and stuff, which thankfully I recorded the call and showed there that wasn't the case at all. So there's, like, kind of just this bad blood aspect where they really seem to hate third-party apps for some reason. I guess that would be reason one. Reason two would be, even just like, okay, just charge everyone $5 a month if they want to stay around. Like, the economics of that are really tricky because the way Reddit chose to do this is based on a per API call basis, which isn't inherently weird or anything, but at the price they chose, it changes the calculus a little. So, like, unsurprisingly, like, a free user typically uses less API calls than a paid user, so they cost less. The average subscription user in Apollo currently uses about a little less than 500 requests per day on average. So when you do the math, that works out to about, over the course of a month, it would cost about $3.60 or $3.70 to keep them around. So if I charge them $5, after Apple takes their cut, you're looking at like $3.50 left to the developer. So I'm at like 10, 20 cents in the red, on your average user.
And the other problem I'm sure he talked about later on the show was that many users are grandfathered in at a lower cost.
Yes, that was his. That was part of the second thing. And
I paid Christian every year to keep Apollo premium and all of that stuff. I also paid Reddit, by the way. Reddit has a premium thing, and I value Reddit so much I paid for it. So by clamping down, Reddit has in effect not only chased away Christian, but chased away moderators and users. Look at this is r/pix, which what used to be a place where they display pictures. It was one of the most popular subreddits. Now they're only displaying pictures of John Oliver. All John Oliver, all the time. That's it.
And is this because of Reddit's more recent decision to say that if moderators aren't going to open up their subreddits, then we're going to assign new moderators. So this at least
this lets is the worst thing. Yeah,
moderators keep going.
/r/iPhone r/music and others are shutting down, moving people to Discord and other places. So Reddit reasonably wants to reopen them. They're the worst, the slimiest thing Steve Huffman did is say, well, we're going to give users the option to vote out their moderators. And if you don't like it, if you want to keep your subreddit open, you can always throw them out. Evil man. He said something about peasants and gentry.
Yeah.
He says that the moderators are acting like landowners. Well, so, Steve, you are, in fact, acting like a landowner. This is the same rhetoric, by the way, that, sad to say, Elon Musk used about blue checks on Twitter.
Of course.
And this is the tone-deaf Silicon Valley thing that is, frankly, going to kill the free and open web. You know, they see this really as a place to colonize and make money on.
Absolutely.
And they forget that it's made of people and we're the people.
Yeah. And in this case, you have people who are like France. They are protesting. I always think of France, like every little thing that changes in that country, you've got protests going on. I do want to point to, everyone should go check out that interview because I also asked Christian Selig, what would it take for you to keep Apollo running? You know, what would be the sort of pie in the sky reason that you could keep it open, and what could Reddit do to kind of fix things? And I thought that it was a really interesting response. So you can check out.
Oh, you're not going to tell me. Huh? Well, this is probably a long response.
Yeah.
You know, Reddit was headed towards an IPO. I have to think that that's kind of scuttled at this point.
Interesting. You think so?
Oh, yeah. Well, would you buy?
No.
The future of Reddit is unknown and unclear. Huffman says he's probably right. This will blow over, but it won't blow over without long-term damage. And I really think there's long-term damage. Already in the first week of the boycott, 10% drop in usage. I feel like it's the end of the line for Reddit. Just very, very much the end of the line for Twitter. It's not that they're going away. They're just not what they were.
Yeah. Do you think if they had waited until after the IPO to do this, that everything might have been different? I just think it was an odd choice to risk doing what's happened now before they did the IPO. But did they need to show this extra source of money before they could even do the IPO?
Reddit has never made money. They've only lost money all this time. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to sell an IPO. Maybe not
in this world
stock market. Yeah. But I think the thinking was, well, we can't do an IPO if we don't have some sort of path to profit. So this is their path to profit. But I think they have the right to do this. And companies, of course, have to make money. You can't be profitless forever. But I think you have to really consider what makes Reddit Reddit. And it's the users.
It's the people.
If you cheese them off, you're out of luck.
Yeah.
Our phone number is 888-724-2884. We are live between 2 and 5 p.m. Eastern time on Sundays. You can call then and we will get you on the air if we can. If we can't, you can call during off hours and leave a message. Mm-hmm. We are going to play back some voicemails we got this week. We also have emails, atg@twit.tv. And you can Zoom. We like the Zoom. In fact, we've got somebody on Zoom I want to get to in a second who's playing his guitar. That Zoom call is call.twit.tv.
So many ways to reach out to us.
We keep making more ways.
Yeah. Soon we will also have a network of carrier pigeons around the U.S.
I like that. Wouldn't it be funny?
That'd be so cool.
It's time
cool.
for another pigeon and a pigeon flies
that
in.
That would
and
be so
take
cool.
the thing off and read it. Let's do that.
Let's just carve a hole.
Let's do that. Let's how do it. We? How do you do carrier pigeons?
We'll have to hire someone, a specialist.
A specialist, sort. And we'll have to have a hole in the roof, as you say, because it's like owls in Harry Potter. They have to be able to fly in.
They have to
in.
Find a play in. Wait, how does Santa get in here?
Oh, we have a chimney.
We can find the chimney. Yeah.
There's a chimney somewhere.
We'll repurpose it.
I think I want to do an ad before we do our first call.
Not a bad idea.
And then we're going to talk to Adolf, who's going to play the guitar for
us. I'm so excited.
Are you going to play for us, Adolf? Yes, he is. He's playing right now.
Very well, it seems. I'm seeing those fingers move. So either it's all just a really good ploy, or
if you don't have the mic on. Our show today brought to you with my email company. When you send us an email, atg@twit.tv, it goes into my Fastmail inbox. In fact, I have a very special, elaborate Fastmail filtering system. It's why I love Fastmail. If email is important to you as an individual or a business, you shouldn't really be using free email. you should be paying for email so that you get customer support, better service. And Google doesn't just someday say, oh, you know, we're tired of this, which they just did with Google domains.
Oh, my God. Just everything. All
Google
the time.
Suddenly says, you know, we're selling Gmail to Squarespace. Enjoy. No, I pay for Fastmail. I have for 10 years. I moved off Gmail to Fastmail. Same thing for AOL mail. So many people still on AOL or Hotmail. You know, free email is worth what you pay for it. Here's the real problem with free email. You're not the customer because you're not paying them. You're the product. You're the thing they are selling. Not with Fastmail. You are the customer. Fastmail has the best web interface ever. In fact, as an experiment, when I set up my new MacBook, I decided I'm not going to use Apple Mail. I'm not going to set that up. I'm not going to put MailMate, my third-party mail app, on there, although it works wonderfully with Fastmail. I'm just going to use their web interface. And it's great. You have quick settings. You can choose a new theme. You can switch between light and dark mode, which I like. Change your text size without leaving the Fastmail screen you're looking at. They have now masked email addresses. You can show or hide your reading pane. You can switch between folders, labels. Choose to auto-save contacts. So if you respond to an email, it automatically goes into your contact list. Generally, that's what you want. In fact, I have a great filter, Fastmail. Thank you for the filtering system set up so that if somebody is in my contact list, they go into an important mailbox because I know them, right? You can use Gravatars so I can see their smiling faces. Set default reminders for events because, I should mention this, Fastmail also lets you do calendars and address books. So I don't use iCloud or Google Contacts. I use Fastmail for everything. It works great. Because it's a standard, it works with all your contacts and apps on your devices. Now you can add or buy a domain through Fastmail. So if you're a poor Google Domains user, can I make a suggestion? They'll set all the records up for you so it works immediately, which means you get authenticated email to and from that address. I have so many email addresses at Fastmail. I love that. I love that. So you're sending mail from your own domain. You know, if you get an email from Leo at leoville.com, I'm sending it through Fastmail. And I can have as many email addresses as I want. So all the family has addresses at Fastmail, and I forward along to them. Fastmail has been doing this for 20 years, a leader in email privacy. For two decades, they work for customers as people to be cared for, not products to be exploited. And there's no advertising. It's as little as $3 a month. Absolutely the best spam filters. I just love it. You get superior productivity tools. Oh, if you use Bitwarden, our sponsor, or 1Password, Fastmail will integrate with that to generate an email address that's unique for every account you set up. So now you've got double security, a password and a unique email address, but it still all goes into your inbox at Fastmail. I could go on and on because I use Fastmail in so many ways. It is, because email is important, the most powerful tool in my toolbox. It's so easy to move to Fastmail. You can even keep the old accounts open and have it forward to Fastmail. Reclaim your privacy, boost productivity with Fastmail. Try it now, free for 30 days, fastmail.com/twit. I cannot recommend these guys more highly. I've actually been recommending them on The Tech Guy for 15 years, 20 right. years yeah. almost. And finally they bought an ad. Thank you.
Woo!
They were getting free ads before that. fastmail.com/twit. Please use that address so we get credit. Fastmail. All right, now I want to. Adolph's red. Does that mean you did it, or do I need to do it? I'm going to pick him up. I want to hear some guitar. We have a lot of musicians in our audience. Did you notice that?
Yeah, we do.
I think there is a natural affinity,
pianists and
between
composers,
coders, and geeks and musicians.
I think it's
the same part of the brain. Hey, Adolph.
Hello.
Way, welcome. Great to see you. What are you playing on your guitar today?
Oh, I can't. I don't see you, but I see me.
Well, I don't.
We might be able to address that.
I don't see that.
Oh, I see you. Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm the reason I have a guitar is I'm practicing while I'm waiting to come on the air.
It's so smart.
Gypsy jazz guitar.
Oh, I love Gypsy Jazz. I love it.
Yeah, there you go. I've been studying for the last 8 years, and it takes a lot of study. And I've been playing guitar all my life, like all of us our age.
Yep. We all did, didn't we?
But anyway, my question is, yes, superseding that, my practice, and that is, this weekend on Friday, in fact, Louisiana put out a notice on Friday that our Department of Motor Vehicles has been hacked.
Oh, and, my God.
All of our information that we give DMV.
Oh, God.
Which is everything except for credit cards, although I suppose they even might have that.
Yeah, I don't think they have credit card information. But so they went online and they went on the newspaper and say, oh, you got to go in and freeze all your credit and change all your passwords and do this and that. Well, I learned from the last time when the Equifax thing happened that I did freeze all those
smart man
credit reporting. Yeah. But I'm wondering to what extent I should go in and change every password, because basically if they already have my Social Security, which I wouldn't be surprised they had anyway, changing all my passwords at this point, I mean, they're going to go in and try to do what they're going to do anyway. So
yeah,
changing.
So getting your DMV record doesn't give them anything, but maybe your DMV password.
Right.
And if DMV is done right, it wouldn't even give them that. It would give them a hash. So
I think I would almost argue that they are making the assumption that many people who have an account with the DMV in Louisiana are using the same password elsewhere.
It.
So they're just trying to blanket statement, change your passwords, because you're probably using the same password. If you aren't, though, then that probably is not going to apply to you, because because I have someone's social security number, that would take a massive amount of social engineering to, you know, go through every single person on that list and try to, I don't know, hack somebody's Gmail by contacting and doing all
that. They call it credential stuffing. If you get somebody's login and password, you try it on a bunch of other sites, because most people, and you don't do this, right, Adolf, reuse their password over and over and over again, or some variation thereof. Folks, that's why you have to use a password manager, and every password has to be unique. This is you. This is in a nutshell, the perfect example. So you said you'd already freezed your credit.
Yeah. The thing is, I don't think I even have a DMV password, because, I'll check and see, but, I may have renewed online or something like that. But, other than that, I checked with my credit cards. I checked with Social Security, and, you know, even alerted them to say, well, there's been this breach, and if anyone tries to go in, I want to make you aware of that. I put two-factor on a couple of things here and there. The things that are important, like the bank, like Social Security, like place where you have your CDs, you know, have very unique passwords.
Right.
I mean, I'm thinking something like Amazon, you know, or a couple of sites. Should I worry about that kind of a password, especially if it has
I don't think I don't think your passwords are vulnerable if you've been using unique passwords. This is why that hygiene is so important. And two-factor also. Turn on two-factor at Amazon. If you have unique passwords for every site and two-factor, that protects you against these breaches. You can if you want to go to haveibeenpwned.com, you can see they have a password section. Have I been PWNED.com? Troy Hunt does it. It's very secure. It's okay to give it your password. You can enter that password and see if that password has been breached. And I bet you the Louisiana breach will be in there quickly. He picks up all the breaches as quickly as he can, and then goes out to the dark web and finds the file, you know, because usually what happens after a breach is somebody starts selling that information. So he'll go see if that information is available and add it to his database. According to NOLA.com, no signs that the hackers have started to sell, use, or released that OMV data, nor have they contacted anybody in the state government. I think the most important thing you could do is do a credit freeze. Go to nerdwallet.com and look that up. Everybody should have a credit freeze on all the time. The only people it's hard for is young folks like Micah, who might be applying for to rent an apartment or buy a car or get a loan. And then you have to unfreeze it temporarily. The good news is the feds a few years ago made it illegal to charge for a freeze unfreeze. So it's free. It will be free to unfreeze it. And it's a little, sometimes a little tricky that they don't, the credit bureaus don't want you to do this, but it's worth doing. It sounds like you already did that, Adolf. That's the most important thing you did, because that's what bad guys do with the social, is they apply for credit. They try to get a credit card. And all that DMV information would set them up for that. They've got your name, address, birth date, and social. Well, that's all you need to get a credit card in your name. And so having a freeze is the single most important thing.
I tend to differentiate between things like getting in on my American Express account or getting in on my bank account versus getting into sites where there's no money involved.
Yeah, I understand. My New York Times password is pretty weak, for instance.
Yeah.
Because who cares?
That's an okay way to think about it, things
like
that.
Well, but my strong suggestion, and I should do it too, I'm with you, is to start using a good password manager. Then it's just easy. It's a good habit to always generate fresh passwords.
You don't have to think about it.
You don't have to think about it, and it's all stored. And then it doesn't come up. I should probably, and a good password manager will tell you, you've reused this password 24 times. I should go through all of those places where I used monkey123.
That's what I've had to do in the past.
And fix those. But as you say, Adolf, who cares if somebody reads my New York Times? I mean, it's not... It's not the end of the world. When I used to get a newspaper, they would steal it from my driveway. It's like that, right? So.
Well, that's the thing. Between you, Uncle Leo, who I've been watching since Call for Help and way back when.
Thank you.
Got my tech TV hat. If you haven't done this yet, then I don't feel bad.
I'm as bad as everyone else. Hey, Lisa and I want to come to the Jazz Festival. You recommend it?
Absolutely. Do come to the Jazz Festival. Do come to the French Quarter Festival. Do come down here in March. Do come down here in October. Weather is better and the festival and music is fantastic.
When we were in New Orleans, we eschewed Bourbon Street and went to, is it Frenchman Street?
Absolutely.
Amazing clubs. Every single club, just incredible musicians. Really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed
it. I'm playing there on Wednesday and a couple of clubs around town. So
I love that.
Wow.
So are you a Django aficionado?
I am. I have been studying that for the last 8 or 9 years. Nice. That's the last peg I had to hit jazz on guitar, and that's a great way in.
Oh, I love it. It's the best. It's so good. I love gypsy jazz.
That's amazing.
We stayed 1 year in Saint-Moi-sur-Seine, in just outside of Paris, which is where Django grew up. And they have all these memorials and they have a Django festival and stuff. I just love it. Django Reinhardt, the great.
Oh, this is the time of the year for these study festivals. There's a Django in June in Massachusetts, the Saint-Moi in Europe, and there's these festivals all over Europe. Yeah. Next year, I think I'm going to go to one of those.
Yeah, Saint-Moi's beautiful. Highly recommend it. It's about half an hour, 45 minutes by train to Paris. It's a wonderful place to stay. We really enjoyed it. It's right on the river. Hey, a pleasure meeting you, Adolf.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
And thanks for raising the alarm if you live in Louisiana. Yeah, I'm looking at NOLA.com. They say, yes, you should absolutely change all your passwords. I don't. That's good. You don't need. People change your passwords too much. If you have good passwords, you don't need to change them.
Yeah.
Turn on two-factor. Great idea. If you haven't reused them, you're okay, I would say. Protect your tax refund. Well, that's a good point, because your social security number is what you often use to it.
And social security, they're concerned about that, either people who get it or people who haven't got it. Somebody trying to spoof you to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, your social, unfortunately, it can be changed, but it's hard to change. And it should, the government says never use this for ID, except they do.
Yeah. Oh. So many places.
Everybody wants you.
Everybody
to use
does.
It.
Yeah.
Never use it for ID. Well, yeah.
Except here and here and on this form and here.
So it's unfortunate, but that's the biggest thing to protect. Do the credit freeze, though. Everybody should do that anyway, because that just prevents.
Thank you much.
Hey, great to talk to you. Keep practicing.
Great question.
It's great. He didn't play.
Thank you.
Take care. I was helping him
a little bit.
We have a few minutes. Before, is it going to be Rod first or Chris first? Rod first.
Rod first.
Rod Pyle will be joining us soon. I see a hand raised. I don't see a name, but I'm going to push the button and see what happens. Oh, you know what? I think I've lost control.
Ah! We're out of control.
I lost control.
Who's driving this thing?
I no longer have control. Right. And John's not here to refresh it, so I don't
something
know
happened.
What to do.
So I think we may soon have audio. Yeah, we're going to have audio from Trevor here in a moment.
Oh, okay. You know what's going on.
I can.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
hey,
we can hear you.
Hi, Trevor. Welcome to Ask the Tech Guys. Mike. That's a tech guy, and I'm a tech guy. There's two.
Whoa.
This last 3 years has been very hard on me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I got my contract renewed for my annual for my Ring Central, and now I have 10,000 toll free minutes a month.
Hey, that should be enough to do that show you want to do.
But I haven't started the show yet, I was looking at places to host a podcast. It's like I just posted on the SBS storage on my server at like 5.4 cents a gigabyte because I have 10 terabytes of bandwidth.
That's fine, and if you stay small, that's fine. But that's what we learned in the earliest days of Twit, where we did the same thing, and it got expensive fast. If you're suddenly successful, that could be expensive. But I think for now, that's probably a great way to start. And then, because it's easy to move the feed to another location. That's not a hard thing.
Yeah, that's the last part I got to work on is figure out where I host the feed.
Right. Well, I would say you could continue to host it where you're hosting it.
I haven't started yet.
Okay.
But
generally, I've told you this before, when people say, I want to start a podcast, I used to say Anchor FM, which is now part of Spotify. Still an easy, inexpensive, free place to do a podcast.
Well, I already have a web server, so I just put the files on the web server.
It's fine to do that, but the problem is that you will find if you start growing, it's fine if you have 100 listeners or even 1,000 listeners. But as soon as
remember,
you start,
I have 10 terabytes of monthly bandwidth on that server.
That's bandwidth. But you said after a few gigabytes, they start charging you or no?
No.
Oh, 10 terabytes is quite a bit.
I can store the files on an SBS.
I see. That's storage. There's bandwidth and there's storage.
I think it's at about 0.06 cents a gigabyte.
Yeah.
Or it's 4 cents a gigabyte.
That's for storage, not for bandwidth, right?
Yeah. So that's not a big deal.
Sounds like you're good.
Yeah. Did you have a question?
Yeah. What I'm thinking of doing right now, because my depression is so bad and my disabilities and all that, is how can I open up my line just be able just to talk?
Oh, I love
that.
Like,
I have the 800 number now.
Yeah. We've talked about this before, Trevor.
No. But like, I talk about like just opening up so I can
people. Oh, how do you let people know that you're doing it? Yeah, I don't know.
Because it's just this chat. It's not recording. It's not public.
I love that. Well, yeah, and you know, you've seen people do that on our shows, like like Owen JJ Stone just puts his phone number up there and stuff. I think that's more for texting. How would you publish? That's a good question. How would you, if it were you, how would you publicize? Like, I want people to call and talk.
I think that's just a matter of putting it on different social media
forums.
Services.
Yeah,
right?
Go to Reddit and Twitter and different forums and say, "Hey, I'm Trevor. I suffer from depression. You're getting treatment for that, right, Trevor? And you're on medication for that?
No. Nope.
Why not?
Nope.
It's treatable. I'm sorry about that, but it is treatable. I thought you were living. I thought you were living in a home.
Yeah, and I don't qualify for mental health hours. I don't qualify for this. Oh, I don't qualify for that.
It's a shame in this country we don't do a better job of that.
No, that's in Canada.
Oh, you're in Canada. God, I thought they did a good job there.
Let me talk to Canada.
No, I'm disappointed.
Canada on the phone.
Let's call that Justin Trudeau and get him on the horn. And that's too bad, Trevor. I'm sorry you're falling through the cracks because depression is treatable and you really should take it seriously.
Oh, that's only one of my disabilities.
I know.
Legally blind, I'm visually impaired, which then complicates everything else because I also have mild cerebral palsy. I have autism. I'm autistic. I have Asperger's syndrome, morbidly obese, and deep depression.
Oh, man. You got a bad hand, didn't you, Trevor? But you know what's amazing? You're calling us. Mm-hmm. You're trying to do something.
I thought maybe if I could give you an audience the number, they might have people who are just like, I worry
that you'd be harassed. I mean, I'm willing for you to do that, but remember, you know, not everybody in the world is nice.
Call block. Remember that RingCentral does have call block on it.
Yeah. Yeah. But
that is a good feature.
See. Yeah. But it's not necessarily perfect because people change.
Okay. Now you got my attention.
Give out. Well, because people spoof their numbers. You can give. I don't mind if you give it out.
Yeah, it's just fine. Warning you that.
But just be prepared because some of the calls may not be wholesome. Some of them, many of them, probably will be. There's a very caring group of people listening. So what? Just beware that it's a. You know, just hang up on somebody if they're rude. Okay. Mm-hmm. Don't let them get to you. Don't let them get to you.
Have security ideas? Because I can't get into getting the. I'm only going to talk about trying to get the thing for getting it on the air with that.
It gets complicated. But I think if you just talk to people, I think that's great. And I bet you people would love to talk.
Yeah, it's just like if you're feeling down. Yeah. And then my longer-term goal right now, or I can do this as soon as possible, is to start these meetings every day for just checking in and just talking to a human.
I agree.
That you can.
Absolutely.
I agree.
You can just be,
You should.
Now I feel better.
You should pursue this because I think that given that, you're not getting the treatment you deserve. You could at least do something for yourself that would make you feel better.
$16,250 a year. $200
yeah.
a year.
Yeah.
Net. So yeah. I'm thinking maybe charge $5 a month or something like that for the thing where you can come in is I can have up to a room of 200 people.
Trevor, we have to run because I got Rod Pyle coming up.
Apologies.
But I love talking to you and I want to encourage you. I think it's really important that you continue to pursue this, that there are caring people out there. Do you want to give out the phone number or not?
Sure.
Go ahead.
877-311-4488. And I do have the ability to kill the line, too.
That's nice. 311-4488. And it's toll-free, 877. That's great. Thank you,
Ring
Central.
What happened to your 88 number, by the way? 88 Ask Leo.
They just discontinued it, but we have a new one, which isn't as fun, but it is toll free, 888-724-2884. So you can call that number.
So who's gonna take over the old line? They're gonna be getting all these weird.
You want it? You can have it. I think we just stopped paying for it. I probably went back out
into the world.
Yeah, because you know you doesn't
That'd
have to be
interesting.
Yeah, that's a good question. I wonder.
Now some scalpers are selling it.
Yeah, call it and let me know what
I'm so
happens.
Curious what
I think
happens.
You'll probably get a busy
It's
signal.
Funny we didn't try.
Hey, Trevor, a pleasure talking to you.
Good to talk to you.
Hang in there, dude. Love you. You're going to be fine. Okay. Just hang in there, okay?
Somebody get the calls.
Call Trevor and say hi. Yeah. Thank you, Trevor.
Adios. Bye.
Yeah, I've talked to Trevor for many years on Ask the Tech Guy. He's been trying to set up a podcast and stuff. And
I think I remember calling before about doing a call-in kind of show. So
yeah, I think just the idea of talking to people, not a bad idea.
I agree.
Man, I feel for him. I don't know what we can do to help. But do you have a voicemail we can handle real quickly before? Because Rod's just minutes off.
Yeah, we got a thumbs up. Voicemail coming in. And if you want to leave a voicemail, it's 888-724-2884 during the week outside of our hours for the show.
Oh, and happy Father's Day.
Oh, yeah.
How many children do you have?
I have no children because I read that poem.
Yes. Do not. And I have two.
Yes. Happy Father's Day to you.
And I just got a message from my son. My daughter sent me a lovely message. So texting is really better than a card and a lot better than a tie.
I don't know if it's better than a card, but certainly better than a tie.
I don't know, a card. In some ways, it feels more personal, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm. I feel like if it's handwritten, if you add to the card,
he says, "Happy Father's Day, Pops." I like that.
Pops, that's good.
Would have never made it this far without you, and I appreciate that every day. Love you, Dad. Aw, that's nice. Called you, but I think you might be doing Disneyland. Nope, that's Tuesday.
It's coming up.
I'm working. You know why? The one thing my kids never really figured out is that I work every Sunday for the last 25 years.
I have that issue too, not with my kids, but with people that I know very well. Like my schedule never changes. And yet you never know.
Every Sunday.
You're always calling whenever. Yeah. Yeah.
Every
you
Sunday.
Have always worked.
Always work Sunday. Yeah. All right. Let's hear that voicemail.
Hey, Leo. Hey, Micah. Name is John. Last name, city is NYC.
John in NYC.
Is, I get the error messages from Apple of the machine shutting down automatically. Allows me to send a report in, but it's gibberish that I'm trying to understand it. Is there another application that can actually decipher it and make it into something that I can understand what's causing the crash of the computer? I think I figured it out, but I'd rather see what the technical specs are. I asked Apple to send me, to tell me what's going on, and I get crickets.
Okay.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thanks, John.
Yeah.
John in NYC. This is a perennial question because for some reason, both Apple and Microsoft give you, when there's a hard crash, all this information that's useless.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do nothing with. And people think, well, gosh, if they're telling me this, I should be able to do something with it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that information is for people who have the knowledge of what's going on there that's causing the crash.
Yeah.
I think that, so there are a few things that you can do, John, to kind of test things out, see what's going on. One is to launch into recovery mode, which you do by on a modern, there are a few different ways. So we're going to link in the show notes, but essentially you can launch in recovery mode and get some help there. It can kind of look at your system, but there's also a diagnostic modes, a diagnostic mode. And a lot of people don't know about this. The diagnostic mode gives you some information that you might be able to actually decipher.
There's nothing wrong with my beautiful new MacBook, but let me get into that. How do I do that?
So on an Apple Silicon Mac, it's different for an Intel Mac. You press and hold the power button on your Mac. And as
shut
you
shut it down first.
Yes, yes. So make
but
sure
if you've
it
already
down.
Crashed, I guess you
if
don't.
You've already crashed and it shut down. Yeah. And then as you continue to hold the power button, your Mac turns on and loads startup options.
Yeah.
When you see options, you're going to release the power button.
Uh-huh.
And then you're going to press and hold Command D on your keyboard.
Okay.
So essentially press
Command
and hold
D.
Command D for diagnostics.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So you wait for the startup to happen. You wait for those options to appear and then let that go and then hit Command D.
So that's different. It used to be you'd press Command Option R or Command R on reboot.
Yeah, you do it on reboot.
That was in the Intel Max, but now you just press. I'm going to do it right now because I shut it down finally. Oops. It's coming back on. Let me stop it again. Let me shut it down. Don't turn on. If you press and hold the power button long enough, it turns itself off.
Yes.
Now I'm going to press and not let go.
Yeah, keep holding it until
press
you see
and
options.
Not let go until I see options. Oh, I hear the dong. It says continue holding for startup options. You don't have an over-the-shoulder shot of it's not the
router. And then as soon as those options appear, you can release the power button.
Loading startup options. Can I release it now?
It says when you see the options.
When you see the options. So not yet. Oh.
Now you can let it go.
Now I can let it go.
And then hold down Command D.
Command D now?
Yeah, press and hold Command D.
Command D now?
Yeah, now.
Continue holding to start diagnostics. Oh.
It's working.
It worked. Look at that. So now it's going into some sort of weird
special test mode where it'll actually run a diagnostics test on your Mac. And at the end of the diagnostics test, it's going to show you some reference codes instead of that long line of everything that happened the system.
It asks first what language I want it to be in.
Probably Spanish.
Yes. Verifying network, downloading, initializing. So you have to be on a Wi-Fi network. If you are not, it won't. So run diagnostics. Okay, let me read you. In order to investigate your issue, Apple needs information from your system, such as device identifiers, hardware and software specifications, and usage information. Why, it even has a barcode of the serial number.
Oh, wow.
Look at that. By selecting I agree or pressing the return key, you acknowledge that Apple can collect. Oh, this is just so. If you don't want Apple to collect this information, run diagnostics offline. Oh, you could do that too. Now, you're going to get stuff that you still can't use.
Well, but it will show it in plain language as opposed to it being the random.
Okay.
You know,
this is new. Yeah. I don't remember ever doing this before.
So,
this is nice.
Yeah, this was, I learned this back whenever my MacBook Pro stopped working. I took it to the Apple store and we got a new one and I had all these issues with it. And that's when I learned about diagnostics mode and was able to find out what was going on.
So I was checking my Mac right now.
Yeah. Okay. So it's going to go through this whole process.
This probably takes a while.
This is something that they will actually do at the Apple store. So you can do this even before you have to go there to test it yourself.
So generally, if you're getting those hard reboots like that, that usually means not software, but hardware.
Right.
It's probably not a bad idea, and Apple will make you do this at some point, to reinstall the operating system just to see if it's some software, but it's almost certainly not. It means there's something physically wrong with your machine, and usually that means a trip to the Apple store for repairs. There may be an issue with the PowerPoint. What?
Wait, you're getting that?
Yes. Reference code PPP001.
Uh-oh.
To learn more about the... This is brand new. There better not be an issue with a... Okay, Apple Diagnosis. PPP001. Now they're giving you all the... There may be an issue with the power adapter. Make sure you're using the correct power adapter. Oh, well, I'm not plugged in at all. Maybe that's why. If this... Disconnect the power adapter from the computer while then reconnect and run the test. Oh, you're supposed to be plugged in when you're running the test.
That's
so okay. If this code appears again, further troubleshooting may be required. Contact Apple or take your computer to an AASP authorized, Apple authorized service professional or Apple store to learn which services and support options are available.
So, yes, they think that you're not getting any power.
And which that's is right.
Why. Yeah, because you're not getting any power. Yeah.
Good job, Apple.
Yay, the diagnostics tests work.
So it does. It gives you information. You actually have a kind of a mini operating system installed because I'm running Safari.
Yeah, as here. Opposed to it being a, you know, the engine code that you have no idea what it means and you have right. to take it to a, you can at least kind of translate that in theory into something that you can, that becomes more actionable.
That's
for
a
you.
Nice feature, I have to say. But in, to be more general, those blue screens of death on Windows or kernel panics on Mac, there, that information you get is not of much use. Even right. for a technician, it's usually not usable. But they don't want to just say, well, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Take it in.
Good luck, yeah.
But it usually means there's a hardware issue. And on most Apple devices, there's no user serviceable parts inside. You can't just fix it. So I would say you probably a trip to the Apple store is indicated. If it's a new machine, it'll be under warranty. That's mm-hmm. good news. And of late, after I spilled coffee in my MacBook Pro some about 8 months ago, mm-hmm. I've been buying AppleCare Plus.
I've been yeah, buying. Not a bad idea.
Yeah. It's expensive. It's a few hundred bucks for this thing, but I just figure.
Less expensive than.
I've learned my lesson.
Replacing the whole insides. Yeah.
Hey, it's time for the Space Force theme.
Space.
Rod Pyle, our space guy, is here. He is the host of This Week in Space with Tarek Malik. And he is not in space this week. He is in the beautiful San Diego Harbor. Hey, Rod. Oh, no, sorry. Hey, it's Long Beach. I see.
That's Long Beach
I see
now.
The Queen
yeah.
Mary behind you. Look at that.
Yes.
What a view
you've got.
How about
that for scenery,
Rod?
Huh?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
He's
How
also,
are you?
He's also the editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine, the National Space Society's official publication, the author of many wonderful books, including First on the Moon, which I really love, on the 50th anniversary of Apollo. We're great. What's going on in space?
Well, there was an interesting study that came out. You know how I love to quote studies, and this will resonate with you because it's about Apollo 11. A group looked at the quarantine procedures for the Apollo 11 astronauts. That also applied to Apollo 12 and I think 14. So when the astronauts came home for those missions, they were carrying hundreds of pounds of moon rocks. And there had been some concern based on a 1965 research project that was done that they might be carrying dangerous germs. So although nobody really believed that in the community, they said, we got to set up quarantine procedures. So if you remember when the Apollo 11 astronauts came hurtling back into the ocean in their command module, when the frogmen swam out, as they called them at the time, and their little raft to pick up the astronauts from the capsule, they opened the catch, threw some bio-quarantine suits in, sprayed the edges of the hatch down wow. with some disinfectant. And then those poor astronauts got in those suits, had to wear them until they got onto the aircraft carrier, and then they were stuck in a
in an airstream.
hermetically sealed airstream trailer, but it was sealed.
I remember them talking to President Nixon through the window yes. of the airstream.
Yes.
Kind of crowded
waiting to their
in
wives
there.
And everything.
How and long they were they quarantined for?
So they transferred them from that trailer to a facility at Johnson Space Center, so a total of 21 days. However, while it was thought to be unnecessary by the general scientific community, the astronauts did say later, you know, it was a really much needed break after the mission because immediately afterwards they were to be set by the press and they had to do a month long worldwide tour. However, if you remember, and I remember thinking of this when I saw this mission as a kid, you and I were the same age. The second they opened that hatch, quarantine was broken, right? Because the atmosphere of the lunar module or the command module was coming out. Had it been something that could have interacted with and survived in the Earth's oceans, we would have been in trouble. So, and also something I didn't know till this study came out was that 24 other people, NASA employees and technicians, were also exposed. So they were quarantined as well.
So it was quarantine theater is what you're saying.
That's exactly what they called it in the article.
But I understand because we wouldn't, if there were something that could survive the harsh lunar environment, it could be dangerous to us. So I understand why they wanted to be extra cautious. They didn't do quite as good a job. They should have had a tunnel. They should have sealed the capsule hatch.
Yes.
Had a tunnel going from the capsule hatch into some other sealed quarantine environment. Yeah, but they didn't. Style.
But worse than that, what the study also said is, you know, the quarantine facility itself, the lunar receiving lab, while tens of millions of dollars were spent developing it, it was woefully inadequate to the task. It was not like the bio-quarantine facilities we have today. So that wasn't very good either. So while it did serve for quarantine theater, as you call it, it was not quite up to the task. It certainly wasn't the Andromeda strain. And interestingly, since all this took place in more recent times, we've discovered new forms of life called extremophiles. We've talked about that before. They live down by hot vents on the ocean floor. They can live under the surface of rocks in Antarctica. They actually digest the chemicals that come through the surface of the rock. So there are plenty of things that are thought to be able to survive in harsh environments. And indeed, some new work says there may well be microbial life on the moon. And the moon aside, you know, we're bringing back samples now from asteroids. We'll soon be bringing back samples from Mars. So this becomes increasingly important of a larger concern. So it's a very timely thing this came out.
Jeopardy question for you.
Okay.
What U.S. government agency did the astronauts have to submit to upon their return to Earth?
They had to submit forms for reentry in the United States with what agency?
Customs.
Would that be?
Yeah.
Customs.
They had to go through customs.
Wow.
They had to state what they were carrying on their persons, which was.
Do you have more than $10,000?
And 810 pounds of moon rocks.
We brought rocks.
Hard to quantify. Yeah.
Outstanding. Bureaucracy
that is so,
beats all.
So government, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quarantine theater, and you got to go through customs. Wow. I remember my dad, who's a geologist.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He's a professor, right?
Knew a professor who worked on the team that analyzed those moon rocks. And I remember seeing one of the moon rock samples, very tiny sample, enclosed in plexiglass when I was a kid.
And you still have it at home, right?
Yeah, I stole it. No, I didn't. But because It was very well protected.
In case anybody's listening, no.
But they were still nervous about it containing anything dangerous, you know. It's interesting.
Was there concern about radiation rather than germs?
Well, that they could detect right away.
No, it was germs. The radiation is more a problem while you're out there.
Yeah.
Radiation levels are actually pretty low. Yeah. But
I realize I've asked a stupid question.
No, not at all.
I genuinely
have you ever heard of a Geiger counter?
But what about radiation we didn't know about, you know? A kind we didn't know about.
Well, that's the problem. But Leo, I have just for you, I have another story that I know you'll love because it's about UFOs.
Yay.
Yes.
By the way, are you now, there is a whistleblower who says, yes, the government has parts of these vehicles and some alien bodies stored away.
At Area 51, that's news, huh?
Yeah. So, well, and actually the New York Times had an interesting opinion piece, which said, we think the government wants us to think there's aliens.
Right.
Because what they're really hiding.
They think it's misdirection, right?
Yes. What are they really hiding?
What I read was that what they are allegedly really hiding is the threat from foreign actors.
Yeah. And super
secret.
Which
may well be something because we've talked about that before. You know, if you want to see what a Pacific battle group is going to do if they're attacked, what do? You spoof them with something So it could be a radio signal, it could be drones, it could be a lot of things. And you ping that at them, and then you see how they respond and how they fire up all their radars and the ships and the planes and how they scramble jets and all that. And that's very valuable to know if you're, China or Russia maybe, to see how we would respond to an attack. So that may well be the root of a lot of this, which is one reason why there's kind of all these security concerns around.
I'm sorry, I interrupted your story about
it. Oh, that's okay. Well, so it's similar. So last year, NASA set up this study. First time NASA's ever looked at UFOs in a quantitative fashion. They've always kind of said, we don't see it. So last year, they set up a study, $100,000, not a lot of funding. 16 people on a panel, very well qualified, number of astrophysicists, people from Princeton and Harvard, homeland security officials, NASA policy wonks, science journalists, legal experts, planetary scientists, on and on, to look at the issue, but only to look at declassified data so they could be completely transparent about it. And this wasn't Project Blue Book again. They weren't looking to try and figure out what these things were. What they were doing was looking at it, say, okay, how can we study this better so it's not this long series of almost ad hoc studies, which is what the Department of Defense has been doing for, 60, 70 years now. And their primary finding was the data is not good enough to withstand serious scrutiny, because you want two or three sources at least for each observation, and you want good at calibrated instrumentation. It's usually a jet aircraft radar or a ship radar or something. But at most, they found most of these had two sources, say a jet and a ship. And you really need to be able to correlate optical and radar and spectral data and so forth to be able to try and figure out what these things are. And there's still a number of them that are unexplained, but it's a problem. One other problem they identified very early on was the second they announced the study, the people on it started being harassed by the public and possibly in some cases by a few peers for doing this work. So there's still this stigma, which is kind of ironic because the public is screaming, we want to know, we want to know. And yet there's the stigma from other members of the public saying you shouldn't be doing this. It's a waste of money. What are you, crazy? So that's part of the problem. And it goes on. So the ultimate conclusion was we need better data. And I think very intelligently, because this is a question I've had for years, they said, you know, there's billions of instruments out there called cell phones, smartphones, where you could take great pictures. You can take great video, audio recordings. You can even record, I guess, magnetic fields from some of the more robust smartphones out there. And so if you could calibrate those properly and get that data, that could be really valuable. So this is citizen science we're talking now. So they're developing apps with a couple of small app developers to be able to send to people so that all of us can be part of this data collection group. Oh.
UFO reporter for iOS. It's true, though, that the number of reports has been skyrocketing of late.
Yeah,
probably because everybody's got a camera in their pocket and there's a lot of videos of strange phenomenon. There is.
Well,
you were talking about Roswell. I think you're talking about Tim Burchett, who's the Congress member from Tennessee, who says, I 100% believe the government is covering up since 1947 in Area 51, Roswell. The military said, we've recovered a saucer. And then the next day, they dropped the poor officer out. And he claimed, he holds up a piece of hot, I can't read this, I don't know the fractional syntax. And he claimed, he holds up a piece of a hot air balloon and says, no, it was a hot air balloon. And I don't believe it. So you would know this, you probably studied this in school, logical fallacies. Mm-hmm. It's hard to prove a negative.
Right.
Virtually impossible. You can prove a positive, like, yeah, we found something and it's a hot air balloon or it's a flying saucer. It's really hard to prove. No, we didn't find any flying saucers. It's very hard to prove. And that's why I think probably some people are complaining about this commission. It's like, what do you expect the result to be? Unless you think it's going to be, they say, well, you know what? We do have alien bodies down there in Roswell, and ta-da, we found them.
Ta-da.
Theory is if there was anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Donald Trump would have announced it.
This is true.
He even said, point. I'm going to look. Well, you think he was stopped?
No, because who would care? And imagine the funding that NASA would get if something
he would
was
love to announce
verified.
This. He would have. Can you loved imagine to
how much he would have
this.
Loved to have been the guy?
Yeah,
right? I am the guy.
I am going to tell you they have been keeping it a secret all this time.
I'm the guy that blew this open.
Now maybe,
and in the midst of all this, a new hoax comes out. Right, so we're trying to get through this morass of data and hoaxing for the past, and in the middle of this, on I think it was TikTok, this report comes. So
well, that
so
means
a family,
true. Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, well, talk about, you know, Chinese perpetrators. So a family member called in, I think it was in rural Washington, saying, hey, there's aliens in my garden. So the cops come out, other people come out. And then this video gets posted on TikTok of this really creepy looking 10-foot alien crawling around in somebody's backyard. I sent it to John earlier. I don't know if you've got it or not.
There it is.
It's a cool looking video, but it was done in Blender. And it was, you know, clearly identifiable as a visual effect.
Yeah.
Right. But this isn't helpful. You know?
E.T. for home.
If people would just kind of get with the program, we might actually figure something out. But as Leonard David, who we had on the This Week of Space podcast on Friday, said, you know, do we really, going back to the Roswell crash.
I love this really quote. This is a great quote. Go ahead.
That these aliens, you know, cross 80 or 100 light years of space in these massive high-tech starships and then forget to put the brakes on and crash into our planet when they're trying to come see
us. They are traversing vast amounts of space in probably faster than light vehicles, but somehow they can't navigate the atmosphere on Earth.
Those last few feet. Those are the ones that always get you, right? Yeah.
You and know, they say that, most crashes happen close to home. So
yeah,
call it close to your destination.
Right, that's right. So. Don't forget your seatbelts. And how many people do they have to abduct to figure out where our food goes when we're done with it? I mean, this is not difficult stuff to understand.
But Rod, I've asked you, yes. you believe in this. You believe that there are aliens. No.
No, I don't. I believe that there's a high likelihood there are other life forms out there in the universe.
Right.
There are some people that still push back on that, by the way. One of our guests has a kind of famous N equals one talk that he does about the Drake equation. But no, I mean, given what we're finding, I mean, recently they just announced that they were looking at some old Cassini data from, I think, 2009. That was the Saturn orbiter, and found that there are these huge levels of phosphates in the waters under the ice cover on Enceladus, the moon of Saturn. That completes that chain of habitability requirements that they had. So it includes carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, sulfur, oxygen, and now phosphates. They're saying they're 500 to 1,000 times what you find in Earth's oceans. And they got this from the plumes that come off that moon and spread out into what's called the E-ring about Saturn. So, you know, they're not saying there's life there, but they're saying there's everything needed to support life there. Soda Ocean, they call it, kind of like Mono Lake in Northern California. So, you know, even just within our own solar system, we know there's at least now Enceladus, Mars, and Europa that probably could support life. So, you know, it's not a stretch to say that they do. Now, that's probably microbial.
Yeah, it ain't Martians. It ain't 10-foot tall orange people with a single eye in the forehead.
You know?
Yeah. My favorite Martian. We love these stories. We really love these stories. They're fun. Just like, you know, fairies and knights in shining armor. They're fun. But so far, no evidence. You know, the three body problem is coming to Netflix soon. They just released the first trailer today.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything on that. Have you?
I saw the trailer this morning. It looks pretty good.
What did you think? Yeah.
I read the book, the first of the three. I didn't get to the rest. The whole premise of this is we find out there are aliens and we contact them. Mm-hmm. And was that a good idea?
Right.
And I won't say the rest, but it's an interesting, and of course, a lot of science fiction is dedicated to what they call first contact, the first contact of alien species and stuff. And it's a really fascinating subject. And, you know, I think part of it is we don't really like the idea that we might be here alone.
There's the theory that essentially every time an alien race gets to the point where they could create faster than light travel, they always end up killing themselves before they
great
get there.
Filter. Yeah.
Oh, golly.
Yeah. And we're in a comparatively young part of the galaxy and we're not one of the oldest galaxies. So when you think of it that way, we could be, you know, amongst the last survivors hanging on, and we got to start over. But of course, there's always new stars being born. So it's not like there wouldn't be others to follow us. But yeah, I've always found that kind of an interesting idea that, you know, when you reach a certain technological level, that's the end of it.
It's great. It's great philosophical fodder. And I love the N equals one issue too. You know what? This is why you should watch This Week in Space, because not only is there this kind of stuff, there's also a space race going on. And you know, it's fascinating as we get closer and closer to launching rockets to send people to the moon, Mars, and beyond to keep an eye on this. This Week in Space, twit.tv/TWIS. The wonderful Rod Pyle from the National Space Society and author of many great space books.
Thank you, sir.
Hosts with Tarek Malik of space.com. Your numbers are going up and up and up. More and more people.
Hey,
you're the only show on the Twit Network that is gaining audience. Congratulations.
We're working on it. And happy Father's Day, if I didn't already say it.
And same to you.
Happy Father's Day.
Same to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am a father. Yes.
Yes. You're a mother father. No, that's wrong. You're a father father. Thank you, Rod.
Daughter father.
Thank
father,
you, sir.
Thank you, Rod Pyle. We
always great pleasure. Show, by the way.
I miss talking to you every week. I really, but every month we get Rod, and that's I guess going to have to do. Yeah, it's great to talk to you, Rod.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
We are Ask the Tech Guys. We are going to go take more calls in just a second at 888-724-2884 or Zoom us, call.twit.tv. Our show today brought to you by Drata, D-R-A-T-A. If your organization is finding it difficult, this is becoming a bigger and bigger issue, this issue of proving compliance, you know. And if you're finding that manual evidence collection and is getting more onerous and it's more difficult to achieve continuous compliance as you grow and scale, you need to know about Drata, a leader in cloud compliance software. That's what G2 says. Look at all those awards. Drata streamlines your SOC 2, ISO 27001, PCI DSS, GDPR, HIPAA, and other compliance frameworks, and it does it automatically. 24-hour continuous control monitoring, so you can focus on the things that matter, like scaling securely. With a suite of more than 75, look at all the companies that use Drata. It's great. That's just a few. With a suite of more than 75 integrations, Drata easily works through applications you're already using, like AWS, Azure, GitHub, Okta, Cloudflare, and on and on and on. Countless security professionals from companies including Lemonade, Notion, Bamboo HR have shared how crucial it's been to have Drata as a trusted partner in the compliance process. You can expand your security efforts using the Drata platform. Lets you see all of your controls, map them to compliance frameworks, so you get immediate insight into things like framework overlap. Their automated dynamic policy templates support companies who are new to compliance using integrated security awareness training programs and automated reminders to ensure smooth employee onboarding. As the only player in the industry that builds, and this is important, that builds on a private database architecture, your data can never be accessed by anyone outside your organization. And Drata is a partner. This is what's really important. They're a partner. All customers are going to get a team of compliance experts, including a designated customer success manager. They've got a team of former auditors, more than 500 audits between them. So you're going to get a team that will help you keep on track so that there are no surprises and no barriers. And before you're audited, you can do a pre-audit call with these guys to prepare you for when your audits begin. It's really nice to hear those questions that auditors are going to ask and prepare an answer to that. Drata's Audit Hub is a solution to faster, more efficient audits. You can save hours of back and forth communication, never misplace crucial evidence, share documentation easily. All the integrations, all the interactions, all the data gathering, it all occurs in Drata between you and your auditor. So it's so much simpler, right? You'll have all the answers right there, and so will your auditor. You won't have to switch between different tools or correspondence strategies. Auditors love it. With Drata's risk management solution, you can manage end-to-end risk assessment and treatment workflows. You can flag risks, score them, decide whether to accept, mitigate, transfer, or avoid them. Drata maps appropriate controls to risks, simplifying risk management and automating the process. Andrada's Trust Center will give you, this is fantastic, real-time transparency into security and compliance. So you know where you stand, and you can show sales, security reviews, customers, partners, exactly what your security and compliance stance is, and that's really valuable. Say goodbye to manual evidence collection. Say hello to automated compliance. Drata, you need it. Drata, drata.com/twit, bringing automation to compliance at Drata speed. Drata.com/twit. We thank him for supporting. Ask the Tech Guys. I think it's a good time to take another voicemail.
I agree.
Hey, guys, this is Lisa from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Lisa.
Formerly from New York.
Okay.
I am calling to ask, Leo mentioned that he doesn't like hibernate or sleep or fast boot, but he didn't explain why. This is on Windows system. I use hibernate all the time, and I want to find out why is it bad. Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Great
good
question.
Good question.
I love it. So... if it's working for you, fine, go ahead and use it. The reason I have these issues with hibernate, less so sleep, a lot with fast boot, is because I used to get, and probably still will get, calls from people who are using it who have problems. Mm-hmm. The reason hibernate, what is hibernate? Hibernate is a low power, non-power mode where the computer saves out everything in RAM to hard drive. So it takes up as much hard drive as you have RAM. Nowadays, that could be quite a bit, right? Saves that all out and then turns off. It's off completely. And then when you come out of hibernate, that's good because it's low power, right? It's not using any juice at all. When you come out of hibernate, it reloads the contents of RAM from the hard drive and then jumps to where it was and hopes that everything's going to work. Frequently, that is not successful. And then you got, kind of a messed up computer and you're operating, but you're not operating well and all sorts of problems can occur. So I never use hibernate. Low power, I think, is sleep is fine. Mm-hmm. And I use sleep on most of my machines. But you probably heard us. We had a caller who was having trouble with sleep. So it's not sometimes, depending on your BIOS version, you might be having trouble with sleep. It's always a good idea if you're going to use hibernate or sleep. It's always a good idea to keep your BIOS up to date. Check with the manufacturer periodically. Make sure you've got the latest BIOS. Frequently, there are fixes to sleep and hibernate. Of the two, sleep is much better. I always recommend using sleep. In fact, I prefer sleep to turning the machine off. Those are your three choices, right? Hibernate, sleep, or off when you're not using it. Actually, I should be clear. On a couple of my machines, my Mac Studio, for instance, I always keep it running because it's got servers running on it. Mm-hmm. And I just have it turn off the screen. And I think that's the screen is using more power than anything else. Nowadays with solid state drives, RAM, those are the things you're using memory or power rather to refresh the memory and keep the solid state drives alive. It's a few watts. It's not terrible. So probably in many cases, simply turning off the screen and leaving the computer awake would be fine. But again, that's only if you have trouble. If you have trouble. If you don't have trouble and Hibernate's working for you, Lisa, go ahead and keep using it. Now, fast boot, bad. Fast boot, bad idea. Microsoft should never have shipped fast boot. The idea behind fast boot is to save time. Remember, Microsoft for a while was really getting hit a lot by boot times. People were complaining, it takes me a minute to get my machine up. So all of these are really responses to users saying it takes too long to get started. And fast boot skipped some, I think, important things, important processes to get up and running again faster, including writing out to the hard drive. So fast boot will much more likely get you in trouble. Certainly, if you're going to use Linux on a machine, you should disable fast boot. I think all Windows users should disable fast boot. That's a strong feeling because modern machines boot fast enough. SSDs have really solved that problem. Fast boot is a solution to a problem that no longer exists, and it does it in a way that I think is unsafe and not ideal. If you want, we can go into more details about the fast boot process. Probably the easiest thing to do is Google it, and you'll see all the things that it does. And it's I think it was ill-advised when they did it, mm-hmm. and it's a source of a lot of problems. So my preference, definitely turn off fast boot. most people should turn off Hibernate. Sleep is generally fine unless you have problems with it. And if you do, then either turn off your machine. I understand most people don't want to. Or just turn off the screen when you're not using it. And that saves enough power for most people. Lisa, a good question.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if I were more prepared, I could go through all the things Fast Boot does. I don't want to do it off the top of my head. But it's not a good idea. You know what? I'll ask Paul what he does.
Yeah, I would be curious to hear that.
Yeah, fast startup. If you just Google it, you'll see articles like this. This is from Make Use Of. What is Windows Fast Startup and why you should disable it? And again, it's an answer to a question that is no longer really being asked. You know, one of the things Microsoft does that drives me crazy, to make you think the machine is started, very early in the Windows process, it'll throw up the desktop and the icons. But you may have noticed you can't do anything because it's still starting. Apple has started doing this too, and it drives me
crazy.
That's
frustrating.
I will try, most people don't turn off their machines, but I will turn off a machine like mine is off right now, turn it on, and the desktop's up and the menus are there, the dock is there. I go, oh, I can do something. Nope, I'm still starting stuff. Still launching stuff. Don't do anything. So it says, Fast Boot uses a different approach to Windows shutdown. In earlier versions of Windows, the operating system closes all the programs and shuts down at the time of the shutdown.
As one would imagine.
As one would expect.
Yeah.
With Fast Startup enabled, a PC logs off the users, hibernates all the files, and on the next startup, it simply resumes work from where it left off. It's basically
Hibernate then.
It's like Hibernate, but not exactly. It's like the next step down from Hibernate. And it has the same problems that Hibernate has. And by the way, you have to have Hibernate if you're going to be using Fast Boot. You don't, a fast startup is unnecessary and it causes issues.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line.
I think that it was my understanding that most non-techie people turn off. They at the end of every session, they shut down their computers. Anecdotally.
I never turn off my computer.
I, as a person who, I don't. But anecdotally, I've seen that the average person is a person who, when they're done with their session, because there's so much like they think that, we shouldn't run this and the power here and the this and the that, and it's making the machine get older. Oh, we've got to turn it off. I've always seen people shut them down. So that's why I can understand why something like Fast Boot and Hibernate is something that these folks are using, because they're so used to shutting everything down. With the understanding, though, that, these can cause some issues.
Well, one of the issues is you can't do a Windows update when you're hibernated. You have to be fully shut down. So it isn't a bad thing to fully shut down. And I personally think even today, a lot of computers benefit from rebooting.
Yeah.
Like cleaning out the RAM, even the iPhone. My wife is a firm believer that if anything goes wrong on her iPhone, reboot.
Yep. She was just talking about that yesterday.
Turn it off, turn it on again. She does that almost daily. I haven't rebooted my iPhone in quite a while. But it's true that computers can get, all of this comes down to computers getting confused.
Mm-hmm.
They're easily confused. Don't confuse your computer.
Yeah, I remember doing that with my Windows 98 PC, shutting it down after I was done with what I was doing.
It's kind of old school.
Uh-huh. It wasn't until I switched to the Mac that I...
You needed to do that.
Exactly.
You actually needed to.
You got to shut that thing down.
Let me open the mailbox.
Oh, what's in the mail?
What's in the mail? Here we go.
We should have like a song for the mail.
By the way, as you may have noticed, we do not pre-screen calls. We do not pre-screen voicemails. We do not pre-screen.
We never know.
We don't know. We like to be surprised. Or do you like to be?
I do.
I like to be surprised.
I occasionally like to know that we have people asking the same questions so that we can kind of address those.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I like being surprised.
Well, you'll like this one from Paul, I'm guessing.
We'll see.
In Green Bay, Wisconsin. Paul, we're going to be visiting you because our son, Michael, Lisa's son, my stepson, Michael,
is a
Green Bay Packers fan. And we are going to go visit Green Bay. Now, there's a little dispute in the family. Lisa says, we're going in September. We're going early. I said, no, you can't go to Green Bay game. You got to go to Lambeau Field in December or even better, January, when it's 40 below and snowing and you have to paint your body green and yellow and take off your shirt or you're not a fan. Michael, you should see his man cave. He's got a room in the house. Right? You've seen it.
Yeah.
It's Green Bay everywhere.
Everything everywhere.
He's a part owner of the team because I gave him a share last
That's
Christmas.
A really cool.
I thought that was cool. He now has a bumper sticker that says owner. Green Bay Packers owner. Anyway, hi, Paul. He says, I'm 64, just bought my first cell phone.
Oh.
But he got a good one, 14 Pro Max iPhone. Connected it to Mint Mobile without issue. Nice. One of our sponsors. What's the next? Oh, this is for you, Micah. What are the next three things I should do, set, or verify with my brand new iPhone? What a great question.
The next three things you should
do. That presupposes that there are three things you should do.
Okay, so you've got cellular service. That's great. I think the next thing you should do is, and I'm also thinking about your age. Given your age, I have a feeling that you are a person who probably does phone calls. You probably...
Wait a minute. He's 2 years younger than me, and I never make phone calls.
Yeah, okay, let me...
My daughter calls me all the time. Oh, yeah.
Wait, but is it FaceTime?
I don't like to text.
Is it FaceTime or is it
Sometimes she'll FaceTime.
Okay.
She says, I don't like to text.
Because I've seen, again, anecdotally, people younger than me love to FaceTime.
Yeah, there is a lot of FaceTime.
Do not like to call for the most part.
Okay, Paul, this is the first thing you should not do. Don't use your speakerphone in public. Lisa and I went to an antique store yesterday, and there's a woman talking like this, and I can hear
it. Miserable.
And her friend is saying, where are you? And I'm in an antique store. Where are you? Oh, I'm down the street. Well, I'm going to go outside and wave. Okay.
Miserable.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. What I was going to say, though, is you should make sure your voicemail is set up because that is, I imagine you'll be taking phone calls, getting phone calls. So you want to make sure that your voicemail is set up.
Oh, yeah, that's the first thing you do. And depending, I don't know how Mint does it. It depends on your carrier. But exactly. Many of them, you go in there, you set up a hi, this is Paul. Go Packers and leave me a message. By the way, what do you youngs do for voicemail messages? Have you learned the lesson us olds have learned?
Which is not to say I'm not at home right now. That thing, is that what you're talking
about? Just keep it
short. Oh, mine is just whatever. So in the phone app on the iPhone, you'll see down at the bottom, in the bottom right-hand corner, there's an option that says voicemail. In the top left of that page, you choose greeting. Mine is set to default. So it's not my voice. It's not anything to do with me. It just has the thing that says, this person is unavailable, leave a voicemail. You can choose custom and record your own voicemail, but ain't nobody got time for that. So
so you don't have a custom voicemail?
Heavens no.
Oh, wow. That is what, I guess, what the youngs do. So it just says, hello, I am a robot.
Yeah, essentially.
This is somebody's, it doesn't even say your name.
Because if anyone's calling me, I don't know them. Because why are they calling me? They know better. People don't call me. I don't answer them. So why would you call me?
Wow.
So I just leave it to default. But anyway, imagining you'll get calls, now I would say voicemail is the next.
I'm wondering what my voicemail is.
Yeah, what is it?
Where is it? Where do you go?
Launch phone.
Phone.
Go to voicemail at the bottom.
Okay.
And then greeting in the top left.
Okay, voicemail. Oh, you mean the phone app?
Yeah, the phone app.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Voicemail at the bottom.
And then greeting in the top left.
At the left. I wonder what my...
And then if you have default, then
I have default.
Oh, then you've also got the robot.
What does default say? I think I never said this. I can't play default.
Yeah, I think you'd have to call. I don't remember what iPhones is specifically.
I'm curious.
Oh.
So this is not from your carrier. This is from the iPhone.
Yeah.
Huh. Let's see. Play. Apparently it's nothing.
It's for nothing. The love of God,
it's silence. It's not playing. So I guess I can't figure that out. Custom, you can record something.
Yes, exactly. So if you want to do your fun thing, I used to have, when I was in college, you'd hear the beep trigger voicemail.
Do you remember a day ever in your life where there was no answering machines?
That's a good question.
No, you probably don't. So in the old days...
I remember switching out little tapes. That's probably as old as it got for me, was voicemail with little tapes.
Machines. Yeah. In the old days, if somebody called and you weren't there, it would just ring and ring and ring, and then they'd hang up because they couldn't leave a message. When answering machines came in, probably in the 70s, maybe 60s, we thought it was so cool to leave elaborate messages. Aww. So the family would gather, we would sing, we'd go, hi, hi, hi. And you'd leave this long, elaborate message because it was new.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's like, you know what to do.
Yeah.
Leave a message. You heard
me. Leave a message.
Is that the Seinfeld, believe it or not, that George is not home? He had a singing answering machine. You remember
where
that?
Could I be?
Yeah.
That's what I'm seeing there. I didn't watch that show. Mine was leave a message after the sound of the tiny truck.
This is from Seinfeld.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep. I must be out or I pick up the phone. Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
That's a great jingle.
It's funny. You can stop it now. It's funny.
Hey, so?
But we thought, because it was new, that was funny and cool.
Yeah.
It is the first time.
Right, but every time.
So I'm just assuming your generation has learned, because you've always had voicemail.
We did.
So you didn't have to do that fun thing.
Our thing was to fake people out. Your voicemail message would be, hello, how you doing?
I hate that. And then pause.
And then pause, yeah.
And they start talking, mm-hmm. And you go, this is a voicemail.
I did it. Yeah. And so I realized, no, people will call me who are like coming from a professional setting. That needs to change. So then I went to the default.
So that's a good point. So people, doctors, dentists will call. Mm-hmm. So you should leave us at like, this is Leo. I'm not here. Well, you don't have to say I'm not here, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
So you say, what do you say? This is Leo. Leave me a message.
Yeah.
Beep.
You don't really need much more than that. Which is why I just leave it at the default. This person is unavailable to take your call. Leave a message after the beep. Boop. And then it does. So, okay.
That's much better.
We've done phone. So you get your voicemail set up. The second thing I would do is make sure that your messages are set up correctly. Because you're going to have lots of options there. And if you've got a family who also have iPhones, you want to make sure that you have your iMessage set up correctly. This was an issue that I saw early on with some family members where they were texting me. It appeared as if they were coming to me from their email. And so I won't go into so much depth, but essentially in the messages section, there's an option called send and receive. Make sure that you have the option called start new conversations from set to your phone number, because otherwise, anytime you start a new message, it's going to appear as if it's coming from your iCloud email account. And depending on how you have used these services in the past, it may choose that email as default. So make sure your phone number is set. So that's number two. And then number three, I'm going to say, get your backup situation squared away.
Turn on iCloud.
Yeah. So in the settings, once again, in iCloud, you will see an option for doing backups. And even if you're just using the sort of the free storage that's available,
which is only 5 gigs,
it's not very much at all. Honestly, I would start to budget out to get a little bit more storage, because that iCloud backup is going to be the way that you make sure that every photo that you take, all the messages that you send, all of the stuff that you have is there if something should happen to this device that you have. So voicemail, messages for texting, and your backup squared away, I think would be the first three that you're going to do.
I would also, perhaps, given that we're a little older, go into accessibility, maybe
great
zoom
idea.
The screen.
There's great idea.
You have a choice of screen zoom. I would have the larger icons. You might want to set the text under display and text size, set the text a little bit larger. Those things this is a lesson I've learned. I used to strain,
mm-hmm.
and I realized, no, I can have big text. There's no reason to suffer. So I set it bigger text.
You know what I've learned? I hold my phone too close to my face.
Yeah.
I've enabled that setting that's coming in the next version of iOS where it'll use the front facing camera to say, hey, that phone's too close to you.
What's too close? Why is it too close?
So if you're holding your phone too close, it it leads to myopia. It leads to nearsightedness.
So what I do is I pull my glasses down and I get this close. Like
I was at an event recently where a guy kept looking over and his phone was like right here.
Yeah, that means he's already got myopia.
Yeah, and so it Apple pops up suddenly, and says, "Hey, move it back."
Apple, like it's maybe Tim Cook had to get glasses because Apple all of a sudden is worried about how much time you spent out in the sun. Mm-hmm. Which is also for myopia because you want to change your focal lengths. Now he's probably wondering, backup was really important. And I might even go into my photos and see if they're backing up to the cloud. Because one thing people sometimes do with their phone is just store their photos locally and then run out of space. I actually had somebody call me a couple of years ago saying, "I need a new phone." I said, "Why?" "Oh, I run out of space in my old one." I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, I have too many pictures." So I told her about iCloud Photos. Let the iCloud store them. This is why you might want to buy iCloud Photos. It is much cheaper than buying a new phone, and because you don't need to store it on your phone. You still get thumbnails. If you want to see a picture, you tap it. It downloads it. He's probably thinking, "What's the security thing I should do?" And there isn't. You don't need an antivirus. Don't get suckered.
Right. Oh my God. Yeah. Please don't download any antivirus.
You don't need any security software.
No storage, like no cleaner software, really. None of that is going to help you on your iPhone. And you know what? If I can add my fourth one, it's going to be consider watching iOS Today on Tuesdays.
Oh, that's a very good one.
We've got a lot of great advice there.
I'll give you a couple from our Discord chat. From HMI, I think he's absolutely right. Set up Wi-Fi to connect only to your preferred network. Never let Wi-Fi connect to random ones.
Yes.
That's a sort recipe for disaster. So that's a setting, but the default setting is, you know, connect wherever you see Wi-Fi, just join it. No. And Scooter X says, turn on Find My. Completely agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that is actually, I believe, part of the startup process. Don't skip that.
Always turn that on.
Location services to do Find My.
And then he suggests, and I think he's right, secure your Apple ID with two factor.
I think if you create an Apple ID these days, you have to use 2FA. Yeah.
And even create a separate password recovery process, maybe a phone number or an email. Losing your Apple ID is pretty catastrophic. So you really want to make sure that that's backed up. But that's the security stuff that you should do. I don't think you need any third-party security solutions. The reason you get an iPhone is because it is very secure out of the box. You probably already set up Face ID. We're going to assume that you've done all that.
That reminds me, at the talk show event, John Gruber asked Craig Federighi, the guy in charge of software at the company, about Joanna Stern, the journalist for
Wall Street Journal.
Thank you. I was thinking Washington Post for some reason. Wall Street Journal, about her piece where she talked about people shoulder surfing, basically getting someone's code and then after that taking their phone and then having access to so many things because then you've got access to their email. Yeah, everything's there. And Craig Federighi said, first of all, we're very aware of that. Secondly, that's been a problem for as long as phones have existed. But third, he said, we're working on some ideas.
Oh, good.
So I thought that was really
if you're concerned about that, like you hang out in bars a lot, then it is possible, instead of using a 6-digit unlock code, to use a full-length password, which would be more secure, but also much more inconvenient because Face ID doesn't always work. I find I'm entering that 6-digit code at night when I'm in bed and various times. And so, maybe the other thing you probably – you may or may not want to spend time, depending on how geeky you want to get, with the focus settings, because it is possible to have a number of different settings. When I get to work, for instance, my ringer turns off. Mm-hmm. I find that great. I don't get text messages. There's no beeping coming from my phone. There may be situations you go to church. You may not want that to happen. So you can set up based on location,
time of day,
variety of things. You say every Sunday between 9 and noon, I don't want my phone to ring. That's a very nice setting. So that's a focus. Then those can be completely automatic.
It took me a while to build up the like energy and desire to do them. But once I did, I'm very happy. Yeah, it's very fiddly. But if you're a fiddly fiddler, then you will probably enjoy that. And
great question.
Yeah, that's an incredibly great question.
Now, I had mentioned when I got the new Mac that I would show you my setup process. And it's probably too lengthy. I have a Notion. The reason I put this in Notion, notion.so, is because the very first thing I do is I log into Notion, and now I have my whole setup process for a variety of machines, not just Mac, but also Windows and Linux, as you can see here. And I can go to those and set up, you know, my machine the way I like it, Linux, Windows 10, and Mac OS. And there are a couple of things I do on Mac OS right away, like set up a backup account. I call it Ghost, so that, and never use it, because a lot of times in troubleshooting on the Mac, you want to see, is this in only in my profile?
Right.
So having another admin account you can log into but have never used, so it's pristine, will tell you if that's unique to your profile or it's machine-wide. I always make the cursor bigger. I don't know about it. You probably don't do that. I always turn my control key into my caps lock key into a control key. I hate caps lock. I hate caps lock. These are things I do because I know I'm going to want it.
Let's ask that. How does one reroute a key?
It's in system preferences in the keyboard settings. Under keyboard shortcuts, you have to go deeper now in the more modern on Ventura. And then there's modifier keys. And you can set up all your modifier keys to do different things. Yeah. But I don't like caps lock.
Yeah.
I hit it by accident and I hate it.
When you reroute it, does the light still come on when you press it? When it's command, it just leaves it.
Yeah, I guess it does. Caps lock.
Well, that's a Windows machine.
Oh, no wonder. You can do it in Windows. It's a lot harder. I'm glad Apple builds that in.
I am curious.
I'm thinking not. I'm thinking the light no longer comes on. It just disables that feature. And you can make it be something else. Mm-hmm. If you want, I have it be.
I've never thought of doing that, and I definitely don't use caps lock.
I like a big control key because I use I use Emacs. I'm sorry. I also then will install Brew.
Yep.
Homebrew is what we call a package manager. Windows now has one with Winget. Linux has always had one. The nice thing about a package manager is you can then use it to install everything you use, and with one line, update everything, not just your system apps, not just your system, but everything you bought in the Apple
Even
Store.
Even Mac App Store, yeah.
Because there's a program called MAS, Mac Apple Store.
Yeah, you taught me about this.
Yeah.
And changed everything.
In fact, the best thing to do is, I did a whole hands-on Macintosh.
Yeah, that's right. And those are available to the public,
On Brew. And then I use Brew Bundle, which is an even more advanced thing with Brew. So Brew will let me install everything. But you can save a single file called the Brew file that has, I'll show you my Brew file here as an example. Here's a Brew file. It's a text file. And it has everything that's installed on my Mac.
Nice. So you can make sure it gets.
So I've saved it all. And then I just, so I will literally run this file, then go have a cup of coffee because it's going to take a while. But this will install everything that I normally install on my Mac, even, and I'll scroll down a little bit, even stuff I installed from the Mac store. I have to scroll down a lot. I have a lot of stuff. But the thing is, my Mac is now ready to go. There's a lot of fonts. There's all the fonts.
Oh, nice. It even does fonts?
Oh, sure. Oh. Well, because Brew has everything, right? This is all using Homebrew. And then these are actually Mac store apps that I install. And so that once I've run this program in the background, it takes a while, I'm ready. I got everything on here.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And that's a really nice way to at least get it 90% of the way. Then there's a lot of fussing that you can't automate. I did send you, there's a guy who wrote a script. It turns out a lot of the things that you set up on a Mac can be done from the command line, but there's kind of super secret wizard codes. And so there's a guy, and at some point, maybe you'll do a hands-on Mac with this. But he's written a shell script, which I took, and now I've added more commands to it. So I can run one script in my terminal that does everything else. Hides icons from the dock, changes the size of the icon, changes everything. And almost all that, including, by the way, there is a command for making your caps lock a control key.
Nice.
So all of that stuff can be changed in the command line. So my idea, I think this is the goal and should be the goal for all computers, is automated setup, a reproducible build. That's what the geeks call it. So that it's a setup that when you get a new computer, you can run these programs, these scripts, and by the time it's done, that computer is identical to your old computer.
Yeah.
And you and I use enough new computers. This is something we have to do.
Exactly. And it's so nice to just go, okay, I've got everything I need with a new machine. I remember asking, because we got this question and it was about a Windows machine. It's a question about, can I just use a new machine and have it be the exact same as the old one and like sync between them? And I remember asking Paul Thurrott about that, and he was kind of wasn't sure about a way to do that on Windows. And of course, on the Mac, we can get a little bit closer, but it sounds like with this script,
pretty close,
you can go almost all the way.
And now, so there was always similar programs for Windows, not quite as thorough. Chocolatey was one I would use, but now Microsoft actually has one called WinGet, and they're supporting it. And so Microsoft, understanding the value of having a package manager that can be used to update everything and keep it up to date and set up a new machine, is moving in that direction. So WinGet is has gotten much better now.
That's Windows. Good.
Yeah. You know what I can't live without? My e-bike. Ask the Tech Guys is brought to you by Lectric e-bikes. Thank goodness for Lectric. L-E-C-T-R-I-C e-bikes for Father's Day. You know what you could do is you could go to Lectric e-bikes, get one. I mean, get a certificate or something, and then just print out the order. And there it is. This is the greatest bike ever. This is one of my, like, I have two. This one folds up. And so right in the middle there's a little lock. You can and it folds up. I can put it in my trunk. And the reason I do that more and more these days is because I feel unsafe biking on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
But with my, here we go, with my Lectric e-bike, I can actually put this in my trunk and go somewhere.
Nice.
Now, this is the Lectric e-bike cargo bike. This is amazing. It has extra torque. So if you've never ridden an electric bike, you might not know what we're talking about. I think this is the future of mobility, to be honest. I love bicycling anyway. What you get is a pedal assist motor in the back hub that uses a battery. So you're carrying a battery on the bike, and it makes the bike go when you pedal. You have five settings of pedal assist, for actually six if you turn it off. So you can turn it off and it's a regular bike. Get watch out, that I'm gonna lose that. Did you see that box bumped? It's gonna
No, there it goes.
Every time I lose that box, every time. Who cares? Anyway, the other thing I like about Lectric e-bikes, not all e-bikes do this, it has a throttle too. So if you're stopped at a stoplight, you can just press the throttle and go, and you don't have to pedal. You don't have to just get up on your pedals to get going. And you just smoothly go. You might say, well, are you getting exercise? You bet you are. Because it's Burke dropped all the boxes. Burke, that was a special delivery. Now, let me show you how I get this out. This, if you're watching the video, you can see this is the fantastic folding Lectric e-bike. I just love this one because I could take it to a park, a bike path, unfold it, lock it all in. It's just like a regular bike once you've locked it all in. It has all the same features, and what a great bike to ride. Let me just actually, if you're watching the video, I'll show you the console. It's a bright LCD display, 7-speed gearing, live pedal assist, 5 of them. See, so you can change that pedal assist there with a button. The lights on the back and the front are connected to the battery, so you never have to worry about putting new batteries in. It makes it safer for quick trips or outdoor adventures. Lectric e-bikes created a mode of transportation anyone can ride. With quality feature-filled models, financed as low as $73 a month, this is such a great gift for yourself, if not for dad. Lower your gas costs, reduce your carbon footprint, get outside more often, have more fun. You can get up to 28 miles an hour with a twist of a throttle or next-level pedal assist, but you don't have to go 28 miles an hour. They're foldable. They ship free. Very important. Fully assembled. So this is not going to be a hassle when you get your bike in the box. It's ready to go almost instantly. So it's Lectric. No E on the Lectric. It's just L-E-C-T-R-I-C. LectricEbikes.com. They offer a wide range of customizable, adjustable e-bike options to accommodate any kind of lifestyle. There's the effortlessly fun XP Lite. That cargo bike I was riding, the Expedition, joined more than 250,000 dedicated riders on the road so far. This, see the disc brakes? They're fantastic. These are really quality bikes for less than you'd think, starting at $799, and they are so much fun to ride. And studies show for older folks like me, it gets me out on the road. You know, my knees aren't as good. I didn't want to pedal up steep hills with the pedal assist. I still am riding. I'm still getting out there, getting a lot of exercise. Studies show just as much exercise. And I go out more often because I know the engine's going to power me. There's some great sales on right now for Father's Day. Skip the played out gifts and give the gift of adventure for yourself or dad. Electric e-bikes. Visit electricebikes.com to learn more and explore the epic models they have to offer. I am a huge fan. L-E-C-T-R-I-C. electricebikes.com. This is a revolution, frankly. When we were in Rome, you know, Rome's famous for Vespas.
Mm-hmm.
Those, you know, two-stroke engines just pump fumes into the air. They're dangerous. I saw more and more e-bikes, and I think it's such a great thing. They're silent. They pollute. And you get around, and I tell you what, 28 miles an hour, you're never going faster than that in Rome anyway. It is really amazing. I love.
They're so much fun.
There's so wind much through your fun. Hair. Wasn't that fun riding around?
It was.
Did you get one yet?
No, not yet.
You should take one home.
I should, because I'd like to try them. We've got a bike park nearby.
Well, you know what? I just found out. I'm very excited. You know, nobody cares about this, but you and me, maybe the studio staff, but they're widening our 2-lane stretch between Petaluma and the next city down in Marin, which is Novato. The highway widens up there. They're going to build a bike path all the way from Petaluma to Novato, 14 miles. I'm going to be on that every
perfect.
Day. Perfect
yes.
on my e-bike. Oh. You might say 14 miles on a regular bike. I don't know. But on an e-bike, you just go, yeah, no problem. Let's go down to Novato.
And after a question from last week about charging an e-bike at
it anywhere. I mean,
superchargers.
They charge up fast on your regular. It's not like a car. They charge up fast on your plug. So I plug it in when I get home. It's always ready to go. Nice. Long range, too. Easily can go to Novato.
That's what I was wondering, if it can make it all the way.
That's nothing.
Nice.
You know, Harry McCracken told me he rides his e-bike all the way. He lives in, Palo Alto, all the way up to San Francisco and back. That's his exercise. I'm telling you.
More than I'm doing.
Get an e-bike.
Yeah.
I think it's Chris Marquardt time or no? Yeah.
All right.
I think it's time to talk photography with our friend, Chris Marquardt. Hello, Chris Marquardt.
Hello, Mark. Hello, Leo.
Hello. Oh,
you're not on your mic. You're on your laptop mic. Get on this mic.
Oh, no.
He sounds like he's under.
Very roomy.
He's in a tunnel.
Under the sea.
Best microphone selected.
There we go.
Is it better?
Yeah, yep. All better. Hi, Chris. You got that good mic. Hi. You want to use it? Chris Marquardt is a professional photographer. He writes about photography. He's got great books on film photography, wide angle photography, and he does the oldest photography podcast known to man, Tips from the Top Floor at tfttf.com. Chris is
I'm a fossil.
You're like me, an original podcaster. In fact, that's how we met at the podcast, one of the first podcast expos. Every month, Chris gives us an assignment and reviews the effects of our previous assignment. What was our assignment this month?
Well, the assignment was dull, but we didn't get dull photos. We actually got some interesting ones. So,
D-U-L-L, dull, like boring.
D-U-L-L.
That was a brave assignment. All right.
Well, it was pulled from the fishbowl. What can I do? Other than putting it in there in the first place, of course. We had 15 people sending in their pictures, and I've made a choice of again, and the first one I want to show is this one. Byron Amin writes under the photo, "Our library's dull. I felt this famous one in Dublin under repair looks dull without the books, taken in the Book of Kells."
Oh, that's a shot. That's empty shelves
inside the library. I didn't have any books in the shelves.
Wow, that is dull.
That makes for a dull library, doesn't it?
But it's actually a beautiful library, isn't it?
Yeah, my goodness.
Not as dull as it could be. Wow.
Yes, it is.
Wow.
So that was the first one. The second one came from Doug Burba, titled Dull. There's a little description here. Rain splashes and the dull thud of hail.
I love it.
Initially, I thought, what's dull about this photo?
It's not boring dull. It's dull.
It's the sound. So what we're seeing is a black and white photo of some surface with water on it, and then something, apparently hail, hits it, and the splash, and Doug captured that splash of water going up in there. Nice thing here photographically is the focus is exactly where it needs to be on that splash. It's not easy, I guess. He might have dropped something in there and measured it up front. We'll never know. And the other thing is that the splash has a nice contrast to the background. So you can clearly see it. It's the background is dark. The splash is bright. So that gives it, that makes it stand out.
Those tiny little lines that you can see in the darker part is just exceptional.
I also, there's a story that you kind of see when you're looking at this, because I think about Doug, he's behind a window. It's hailing out. He's not going to bring his camera out there in the hail. And he must have shot 1,000 pictures to get that one perfect shot of the hail landing.
Good thing about very modern cameras, let's have a quick look what camera he used. He used the Pentax K20D. I don't know how fast that is, but modern cameras have like fast shutter speeds.
And that's a classic old camera.
10 or Pentax. More frames per second, so you can shoot very a whole nice. Bunch. And
great shot. Chances. What a great shot.
Great one.
And then he chose to put it black and white, which I thought was a good aesthetic choice. Yeah.
Looks nice. And then last but not least, Jamie Lente, again, coming up here. The Empire Sucks is the title, Watching Paint Dry. So this is desktop photography or tabletop photography.
Oh, it's a little Stormtrooper action figure.
It's a figurine that holds a brush, a real-size paintbrush. So it's as big as the figurine. And there's a logo, I think it's the Rebel Alliance logo. Uh-huh. The Stormtrooper is.
I think it's his job to paint that out.
Yeah, right? That's what I was wondering. It's like got to cover up the graffiti.
Demi,
kind of
that's such a great
that's
picture.
That's a really good picture.
I love that. So she must have just watched Andor, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
Possibly. But of course, you also have to have an action figure and a pretty detailed
one.
Like
she's a collector. So. Yeah. Nice.
That's the three pictures
those
I chose.
Are great.
I love those. I love all of our photographers. Thank you for participating. 75 of you. That's wonderful. But it's not over because the fishbowl is not empty.
The fishbowl still has plenty of stuff in it. And I will draw one from the fishbowl. And it is... Oh, we are going to see a whole bunch of food photos next time. Tasty.
Tasty.
That's nice. I like that.
Renee Tasty. Silverman has put as the photo at the top of the Tech Guy group something that would easily qualify for this, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I love your sense of humor, Renee. Nice job. Tasty. Look at that.
So do we have 1 minute for three little food photography tips? Because there will be a lot of
them. We have plenty of time. That's the beauty. This is not a radio show anymore, Chris. There's nobody tapping a sign saying, wrap it up.
That is cool. So three little tips. Let's see. First of all, a lot of people will shoot with a smartphone. If you shoot with a smartphone, use the telephoto lens, the one that zooms in, the long lens, as we photographers call that. And you don't need the whole plate on the picture. Just go right in and cut something out with the picture. It's okay if it goes over the edges of the frame. Gives it a bit more. Yeah, it's closer and it will feel closer. Second tip is you can use RAW. If your smartphone allows you to switch to RAW photography, that will give you better colors typically. So especially in like artificial light environments. So do that. And the third one, if you can, shoot using daylight. Mm-hmm. Like if you have LED bulbs or even old fluorescent bulbs, turn those off. Avoid direct sunlight. Indirect window light is amazing for food photography. So if you put that plate next to a window and the sun is not shining directly at the food, and you go close with your long lens, with your telephoto lens in the smartphone, that's when you will get the keepers.
I think that's exactly how they did this peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Probably.
It looks like daylight, doesn't it? It's beautiful. Did we get any AI submissions? I know you were worried about people generating AI.
Let's have a look. I don't think we did. No, I did. I went through them in detail. We have all natural photos.
Yeah.
We have all natural photos. And I've seen this recently on a workshop where I was expecting AI to be a real big topic. And for an entire week of a workshop, which was a long one, I think I came up once. The rest was photography. People want to do photography.
I want to take pictures. That's enough technology. I don't need more. It's a wonderful aesthetic process to use your eye to think, to compose, get a shot. And when you get a great shot, it's just the best.
It feels good. Yeah. There's pride there. Yeah. And you don't, I feel at least, you don't get that same feeling with.
And then if you get your photos to talked about here on the show, then hey, that's
glory.
Exactly. That's glory. Hallelujah.
So here's how it works. We're going to give you a month, 4 weeks before Chris returns. He joins us every month on the third Sunday of the month?
The third Sunday.
Third Sunday of the month. So you have till the third Sunday of July. We want new pictures because really the purpose is just to get out and take pictures, not to go through your old ones, but get out and take some new ones. You're looking for some tasty. By the way, as you saw with Dull, tasty doesn't have to mean tasty food. Who knows what tasty means? You get to decide that. You're the photographer. If you get an image, you go, I like that. You can do this up to once a week. So if you start now up to 4 images, you need to upload them to our Flickr group. Now, Flickr is a free photo sharing site, flickr.com. Once you join Flickr, if you're not already a member, join the Tech Guy group. And you'll know you're in the right group because we are almost to 14,000 members. In fact, I guess by next week we'll be, or next time you're here, Chris, we'll be at 14,000 members.
Wow.
7,700 photos. This group's been a group since 2007. We've been doing this, Chris. Can you believe that? That's 16
a
years.
Long time.
May 25th. We just celebrated our 16th anniversary. If you go there and want to upload a photo, make sure you tag it TG Tasty. And if you do an AI photo, just make sure you tag it TG Tasty AI so we know. Because we don't want AIs to compete with real photographers, but we do want to allow AI images. So TG for Tech Guy, Tasty, and then add AI if it's an AI photo. Renee Silverman, our wonderful moderator. She does such a good job.
Yeah, already updated the Flickr page. Already has the Tasty word in there.
Yeah, oh, she's already watching. Yeah. She's good.
She's good.
Hi, Renee. So make sure that you thank her because she works, you know, like all Reddit mods for free, just out of the love of photography. She's a great photographer herself. In fact, check out our pictures. Renee will say, okay, thank you. Got the picture. Thanks for the submission. And then cross your fingers that next month, Chris will say, that was tasty. That was very tasty.
That's how I choose pictures. I look at the thumbnails. I pick the ones that I think are tasty. And this will be difficult. Definitely.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of tasty stuff. Make sure you eat lunch before.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, don't go grocery shopping hungry.
You can find Chris on discoverthetopfloor.com. That's his one of his many websites. That's the one, though, where you can see what projects he's up to and especially what workshops he's working on. The Eastern European Tesla Tour. Does it have any seats left?
One on the way from Berlin down to Transylvania is still open.
Okay. So, it's a great chance to travel with a pro photographer and other photographers who, you know, love what they're doing, stopping. The best travel ever I've done is with photographers because they stop at anywhere there's anything interesting to see. They go, pull over, there's a cow. And we all bundle out of the car, take pictures, then we bundle back in. It's so much fun. It's so much fun. You will really love it. Thank you, Chris. You're the best. Discoverthetopfloor.com.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great month. Take care.
You too. Take care.
Where do we stand here, Mr. Producer Man?
We have a phone call,
but do we have an ad first and then we have a phone call?
No, I just did an ad.
Oh,
I think we'll do an ad in a minute or two. Which one do you want me to take? Neil?
I think Neil, the phone. So somebody who called 888-724-2884.
Hello, Neil. Press *6 to unmute.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing?
Nice.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thank you.
Welcome. Thanks for calling.
Welcome.
What's up?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I do remember your first, you talked about the answer machine earlier. I remember the first one I saw, Leo, because I think we're similar. The first one I saw was a mechanical answer machine. I was probably a kid. A friend of mine and his father was a plumber, and he had an answering machine. Literally, had this sat under the phone. The phone sat on top. It literally lifted the receiver up and played the little speaker.
Whoa!
I thought that was a kid.
Wow. I don't know if that was too,
an answering machine.
I don't know if that was very widespread. It actually, it had an arm that picked up the phone.
Yeah. I mean, it must've come from Bell system, right? Cause you couldn't use any other equipment.
That's right. In those days.
They had at the time. It literally lifted up the receiver and it literally hit the tape. I remember that distinctly as a kid.
Hysterical.
So it was probably in the 60s.
Yeah. That's a long time
ago. Rube Goldberg voicemail. Yeah.
It really did change things when you didn't have to call back. not necessarily for the best, come to think of it. Well, what can we do for you, Neil?
Well, I was thinking about this because there's a lot of news lately about artificial intelligence. I always thought a redundant question, but I was wondering, I'm trying to understand what exactly it is. I mean, I know you talk about the chat GPT, you talk about photography and so forth. What exactly is artificial intelligence? Is that a new type of computer or something? Or, you know, is it like this, maybe the enterprise computer, shall we say, for lack of a better way to describe it? Is that artificial intelligence?
I think this is such an important question that doesn't get asked enough. I think mainstream press, you just go, oh, you know what it is, AI, and they talk about it. And I think the biggest problem with even the phrase artificial intelligence is the implication that it's intelligent, which it's absolutely not.
Right.
And in fact, a lot of our language and even the way they've set up things like ChatGPT is designed to make you feel like it's a person, that it's thinking. ChatGPT will use pronouns. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not an I. It's not. It's not a, it's a machine. It's a machine that is pretty much like that Bell system pick up the phone answering machine. You would never say that thing was thinking, would you? You would never say that's an I.
Right.
That machine, would you? You would never say, oh, it hallucinates. It's not hallucinating. It's not thinking. It's not intelligent. And I think it's very important to clarify this language because, unfortunately, or and I think probably intentionally, these companies are kind of trying to make you think it's like science fiction, like it's HAL 9000 from 2001, that I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that, that it's got will, that it's thinking. It's not. So really, what is the difference? This is a question a computer scientist might ask between a traditional von Neumann machine program and these more modern programs. It's a program, by the way. What is the difference? So when we write computer code by hand as a coder, you know this because you studied a little Python, you're giving the computer step-by-step instructions. A von Neumann was a brilliant thinker. There's a wonderful book about him I just read, who, besides doing things like inventing atom bombs, also did early thinking about mechanical computing. And he came up with a notion, he was the first to think of it, that a computer should have storage where it can store the program it's working on, that there be sequential instructions in that program, it have a processing unit, it have output. And it was all kind of like an assembly line, you know, pulls in the program, takes a step, outputs it, takes another step, outputs it, that kind of thing. It was very much linear assembly line. That's to this day how programming works. Mm-hmm. It's a linear assembly line. What's different about, and I'm going to use machine learning instead of AI, because that's really a better description. It's machine. Learning is still a little.
I know. I was thinking about that too, about machine learning.
What it's doing is it's writing its own instructions. See how we humanize this? It's not, it has no will. Of volition. The programmer has set it up. Instead of me telling you what to do, I want the machine to look at a lot of examples and using some very well-known technologies like neural networks, generated adversarial networks, some very well-known techniques, take this body of information and generate its own instructions, its own rules. That's the only difference. Instead of a human doing every step of the way, the machine can generate its own rules. Often those rules are a black box to us humans. It's not expressed in a way a human can look at and go, oh, I see what its rules are. It's doing it in a way that it understands, but it's still, and this is important, mechanistic, deterministic rules. It's just generated its own from a body of information. So ChatGPT, that's what it's done. That's what all of these systems have done. You give them a body of information. In the case of ChatGPT, it was the entire internet. In the case of Stable Diffusion or Midjourney, the image generators, it's all the images it can find on the internet, right? All the public images. It ingests those and makes rules based on that. Oh, well, when I see the word the, it is frequently followed by a noun. And this is the nouns that are, you know, these are the nouns that I have seen, 150,000 of them or whatever. And then it will probabilistically, this is kind of a simplistic way of thinking about it, predict which one is the most likely to come up. But it's going to vary them because it wants to give you a different answer every time. So it's taking from, and the same thing with Stable Diffusion with an image generator. It says, well, when you see this, you usually get this, or this seems to go well with this. What it's really doing, if you think about it, is what do humans do when given this input? What's the next thing that a human does? It isn't human. It's just predicting probabilistically what a human would do in this situation and then does that. And that's it. That's the entirety of it. It is probabilistically, you know what? You're already used to this with something called autocorrect. When you have a suggested next word on your phone as you're typing in your text message, that suggested next word is exactly the same process. Mm-hmm. It's not quite as sophisticated, but it's the same thing. In fact, you remember we used to play a game where you would pick the next word,
yep,
the next word, and you generate sentences. They were actually very much like ChatGPT sentences. Mm-hmm. They're very similar. So it's not intelligent. It's not even artificial. It's a way of creating a computer program that the programmer doesn't have to write all the steps. In the early days of this Eliza, you might remember since you're an old timer, back in the earliest days of computers, in fact, you still have Eliza around if you search for it, it would have a computer psychotherapist where you would say, I am having bad dreams. And they would say, well, tell me about those dreams. It was doing exactly the same thing, just in a somewhat less sophisticated way. In fact, the early Eliza programs were those first style programs where the programmer would write every bit of it. So he'd say, well, look for a word, a noun in there. Oh, dreams. Now take that noun and put it in this sentence. Tell me about those dreams. And that was all in the program. There was nothing generated any other way. It was all human written. So that's the biggest step we've taken is instead of humans creating this code, machines create this code based on analyzing human content and saying, well, a human would do this next. Is that thinking? No, because it doesn't understand the words. This is really important. It doesn't understand what it's saying. This is why it can be counterfactual. It can lie. Because it's not saying, well, is that true? It doesn't even know what that is.
Right.
It doesn't know what refrigerator is. It only knows that when you see the word refrigerator, you frequently precede it with open or close. Doesn't know what open or close means. Doesn't know what refrigerator means. Doesn't know. Doesn't understand. Isn't thinking. It's merely a set of probabilities that when you see the word refrigerator, these words come before it and after it. That's it. So it's pretty simple. It's really the thing that people have to understand about computers. It's all computers are just a box of rocks and we put electricity into it and it does operations because we've got channels for the electrons to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all. And basically it's adding, subtracting. It doesn't even, many of the early computers didn't divide or multiply because multiple subtractions are dividing and multiple additions are multiplying. So it didn't need to. It adds, subtracts, stores, moves, and then it can make decisions, if then decisions, like it can choose different branches. But it does all of that. That's all modern computer does too. It does that so fast, it looks like it's thinking. It isn't. It's an electrified box of rocks. And AI is just a very big electrified box of rocks. People who are worried about machine, it's crazy that these smart AI scientists are saying there's an existential threat from AI, you wouldn't say, well, there's an, you know, if you've got a machine that that predicts what the next word's going to be, we're in deep trouble. You wouldn't say that. It isn't an existential threat. It's barely a threat to jobs. It's a threat to jobs only if your job is putting one word after another in a proper order, or putting one brushstroke after another in a predictable order. In other words, if you're a mediocrity, if you do the same thing that most other people do, if you write a lot of cliches, you paint a lot of pictures of hobbit houses with big forests behind them, then you can be replaced by something that's doing it automatically. But it's really important. And I don't think we as the media in general, tech media should do better, but general media either, have done a good job of explaining this and playing it down. When Kevin Roos writes in the New York Times, ChatGPT fell in love with me, he is putting fuel on that fire that shouldn't be burning at all. That is not, he did not fall in love with you. It's putting one word after another based on probabilities it learned from digesting a lot of words. We shouldn't even use it, I, they, it, think. None of those words. There's no intelligence. That's the answer. Does that make sense to you, Neil? Is it?
Absolutely. No, that's a great explanation. That's what you don't get from television and so forth. You know, when they talk about, well, this lawyer got in trouble because he used GPT to write his...
He got in a lot of trouble, too, didn't he? You couldn't use autocorrect. You should not use autocorrect to write your legal pleadings. So replace wherever you see AI with autocorrect.
Yep, that's a great way to think of it.
And then you won't be so scared about it. You know what? Here's the problem. We're human. We love stories. We love sci-fi. We love fantasy. We love imagining. Oh, how it could be. It could be magical. It could be amazing. And so we want these. We want to imbue these. It's a normal thing.
Yeah.
All inanimate objects, we try to imbue them with.
Psychologically, yeah. Human, we anthropomorphize.
Yeah. Human attributes. It's just a box of rocks. Do an autocorrect.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Great question.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful question. Yeah.
You got me off on a little philosophical tangent.
I'm glad you did, though.
But I think that's kind of the best way of thinking about it, because we give it too much credit. Computers have done amazing things because they are so fast, but they're just doing fast math, fast branch prediction. That's all they're doing over and over again. And there's a big gulf between what we as humans do and what machines do. And I feel like I don't want to take the magic out of the world.
Yeah.
People sometimes say, well, if you don't, you know, anthropomorphize, if you don't say rocks are alive, if you don't, then you're taking the magic out of the world. I think there's so much magic in the world as it is, that if you look at this amazing creation that surrounds us, the fact that a bunch of cells
yes,
could self-organize in such a way that I can deja that out of my mouth
yes,
is mind-boggling. There is plenty of magic all around us. We don't need to make more up.
Yeah.
We don't need to imbue rocks with special magical powers. It's amazing what exists. And so let's celebrate that. That's all we really need to think about. We want to do another ad and then maybe wrap things up. I hope you aren't sorry, Neil, you got me started on that. I've been thinking about it a lot because I see some things and I go, what are they talking about?
Why are they talking about it like that? Why are you saying the things that you're saying that are so inaccurate? And there's so much misunderstanding and misinformation and in some cases disinformation out there.
This is why I think it's important to learn to code, by the way. I encourage you to learn Python, and I still do. I know you've got crocheting and other hobbies Every kid should learn to code, not because they're going to be coders, but because it's important to have a kind of intimate knowledge of what's going on inside these things so that you don't think, oh, wow, this is smart or thinking or somehow magical. It's not. It's barely magical. You're magical.
That is true.
This is something that us as magical beings created.
We made it.
It's a box of rocks with electrical ions going through it to simulate stuff. We're the miracles. You know what else was a miracle? I had a very nice night's sleep.
Amen.
And you know why? Same reason you might have too. Yes. Brooklinen. Ask the Tech Guys is brought to you by Brooklinen. These sheets, these towels, these linens are fantastic. Brooklinen was founded by a husband and wife duo in Brooklyn, of course, Rich and Vicky, about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, to provide you with hotel quality luxury bedding. And this is really important. I don't think I emphasize this enough at an amazing price. I have sought for years, decades, the best linens. I am actually an expert in this. You might not think so. But I have gone and spent, I have spent thousands of dollars on a set of sheets, hoping to get that experience. You know that experience. And I guess it's at a hotel, but you get in freshly laundered. They're kind of crisp. They're cool. You get in there and you go, oh, man. I found it. It's Brooklinen. If you're unsure where to start, take a look at Brooklinen's bundles. They'll save you time and money. And I have to say, as I've said, I have spent so much money. And now that I found Brooklinen, I'm like, wow, I'm going to save. Whether you're outfitting a bedroom, bathroom, or both, great gifts. Father's Day for a wedding. I know we've got June brides. For a housewarming.
Graduation gifts.
You'd be surprised how happy people are when you give them really nice sheets. Now, I bought the best-selling Luxe Sateen sheets. They have this beautiful, buttery, soft feel and a luxurious finish. It's just like smooth. It's hard to describe. If you're looking for a natural option, they have the organic collection just launched, but you got...
I got the classic.
The classics, which are a little more open weave, so they're cooler.
They breathe very well, which is what I wanted. I sleep so cool.
Wire cutter and good housekeeping. Both call Brooklyn outstanding. They have 100,000 five-star customer reviews. One reviewer said, I seem to get that wonderful sleeping temperature very quickly and stay there throughout the night versus with my older cotton sheet sets. Now, I like a little cozier sleep, so maybe that's why I like these looks, but I just, they don't, they breathe, but they just, they feel like they're a continuous thing. There's not, you don't sense any threads at all.
Right.
It's like a, I don't know how to describe it. They're wonderful. What are you waiting for? Shop in store or online at brooklinen.com. Sheets, pillows, towels. They've got bath rugs. They've got robes. That would be a great Father's Day gift. Brooklinen.com. Gift yourself or your loved ones with the rest and comfort. I think comfort's the best word they deserve. That feeling. Visit brooklinen.com today. Get $20 off plus free shipping on orders of $100 plus with the code TECHGUY. Brooklinen, BROOKLINEN. It's kind of a play on Brooklyn. Brooklinen.com. And again, don't forget the offer code. It's really important for us and for you. You're going to save $20 and get free shipping on orders of $100 plus. We're going to get credit. And we care about credit. We want that gold star. Brooklinen.com. And the offer code is TechGuy. Thank you, Brooklinen, for our sheets. I love our
fantastic sheets.
Fantastic sheets. I love our sheets.
They're so great. I just washed mine. It said they were fresh out of the dryer last night.
How often do you change your sheets?
So you're supposed to change them once a week.
That's what we do.
I don't do them once a week. I do them probably every 2 weeks.
I think you're more normal.
I think that is more normal.
I think that's more normal. I think my kids like never change their sheets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wednesday is sheet day. Oh, okay. LaPorte household. Yeah.
I would wash them more often if I had a bigger washer and dryer.
Yeah, because they're big. You can't do them all on one load?
No. That's what? Why I had to do three loads last night to do everything that I had.
I could get top sheet, bottom sheet, four pillowcases, and a few towels in my
Missouri, I used to be able to do that.
You can come over and do laundry if you ever, seriously.
Maybe for the sheets, I would do that.
Bring your sheets over.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a whole project.
I extend that offer to all Club Twit members.
Oh my God, Lisa just screamed.
That would be the new benefit on Club Twit, but I don't know. Maybe we won't do that. Club Twit is our patronage system.
Yeah.
More and more, I'm of the opinion that if we want to keep doing what we're doing and grow and add shows, we need this. We need the listeners to support us. I wish we didn't. You know, when we first started, we were ad supported, and ad support works great. We love our advertisers. But a number of you have said, I don't want the ads, or I don't want the ad tracking. I understand that. That's actually why we started this. Mm-hmm. But then more and more, I think, wouldn't it be great if the people who like the shows support the shows, and that makes us able to do more shows? And this has worked out very well. 2 years old now. We started Club Twit. It's only $7 a month. So it's we wanted to make it affordable. Of that, we get a little more than $5. You know, the cut goes to the processors, the credit card companies and stuff. But $5, the money we put in our pocket, if 5% of our audience subscribed, we could get rid of advertisers. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily want to get rid of them, because I like the idea of offering free shows to everybody. So that's what we're going to keep doing. Free shows if you want ads. But if you want to be in Club Twit, ad-free, all of our shows, plus special shows we don't put out anywhere else. Stacy's Book Club's coming up with the Terraformers. That's June 29th. Same day, we are going to interview, actually, Ant's going to interview the author of, have you watched Silo yet on Apple TV?
I watched it. Really good.
Well, it's based on the beloved books from Hugh Howey, the Wool series. And frankly, people say it's very accurate. So if you love Silo, you should listen to this interview. Ant scored. He got a fireside chat at 1 p.m. on the 29th with Hugh Howey. That's part of our kind of trying to create special events just for the club. We have an Inside Twit Alcohol Fueled coming up next month. Rod Pyle's doing a fireside chat next month. We have special events all the time. Community manager Ant Pruitt does a great job putting this all together. You get chat rooms dedicated to all the shows, but get over here. But also chat rooms dedicated to nerd topics like comic books. Oh, look, there's a new Blue Sky conversation. That's new. I bet there's a Reddit one too. Linux, IoT, pets. No, there's not. Actually, but pretty much all of these subjects are all the subjects you might talk about on Reddit. Photography, travel, science, and sci-fi. So you get the Discord. You get ad-free versions of all the shows. You get special shows we don't put out anywhere else, like Micah's Hands on Macintosh, Paul Thurrott's Hands on Windows. This Week in Space started, launched, if you will, in the club, then moved out of the club because we were able to launch new shows. We're working on an AI show. I'm very excited about that. I think Jason Howell is going to host that. So this is all a way of us getting more to you and having you be part of our community. If you want to do your laundry at my house, go to I shouldn't lie. Yes, well, I could.
No, Leo, no? He's not doing
don't
it.
Don't do your laundry at my house. You aren't going to get to do their laundry at my house. twit.tv/clubtwit. Twit.tv. You can, Micah.
Thank you.
twit.tv/clubtwit. We invite you to join, and we thank all of our wonderful Club Twit members.
Yes, thank you.
Because you make this all possible. We literally would not have launched Ask the Tech Guys if the club didn't exist, because we didn't have any ads at first. Now we do. Thank you. You made it possible. We are kind of out of time.
I hate to say it.
There's so many calls.
So many voicemails, so many emails.
So if you are want to ask a question, do leave us a voicemail. We'll get to more next week. And that number is 888-724-2884. You can email us, and I got some more emails in the back, so we'll answer more emails. atg@twit.tv. Mm-hmm. If you want to Zoom us, because we like seeing you.
We do. Call.twit.tv is the place you go. You can do that on your phone. That's what we really like if you do that, because it's very easy from there. You've got the camera. You've got the microphone all built into one place. It's not too finicky. But you can call us from your computer as well.
All I can say is thank you for watching the show. It's really fun to do it with you, Micah. Thank you for being here. We will be back next Sunday from 2 to 5 Eastern. That's 10 a.m. I'm sorry, 11:11 we'd like to start at. 11:11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. That would be about 1800 UTC. Thank you all so much.
Thank you
for joining us in Ask the Tech Guys. I'm Leo Laporte.
And I'm Micah Sargent.
Have a great week.
Bye-bye.
You want to hear about the latest news happening in the tech world from the people who write the articles, sometimes from the people who are actually making the news? Well, we got a show for you here at twit.tv. It's called Tech News Weekly. Me, Jason Howell, and my co-host Micah Sargent, we talk with some amazing people each and every Thursday on Tech News Weekly, and we share a little bit of our own insights in each of us bringing a story of the week. That's at twit.tv/TNW. Subscribe right now.